Good afternoon. I will now call the General Committee meeting to order. Please note that assistive listening devices for use in the Council Chamber are available upon request from staff in the Clerk's office. Please ensure that all cell phones are turned off or placed on silent. Are there any members of Council who wish to disclose a pecuniary interest? Seeing none. On the agenda today are listed two staff reports, 2017-30, land tax apportionments, and 2017-31, tax collectors' role adjustments made under Section 354, 357, and 358 of the Municipal Act 2011. Are there any members in the audience who would like to speak to either of these reports? Seeing none. I will now move on to the next item on the agenda, which is the consent agenda. I will read out the title associated with the items on the agenda. Members of the General Committee may ask that an item be held so that it may be further discussed. Please indicate your intention to hold an item by pressing your request to speak button. The first person on the list will be afforded the opportunity to speak to the item first. If an item is not held, the motion is deemed to be approved upon consent. No further discussion of the item will take place at this meeting. The recommendation will go forward to Council for consideration at the next Council meeting. Staff report 2017-30 regarding land tax apportionments. Approved upon consent. Staff report 2017-17 regarding 2017 assessment appeals. Approved upon consent. Staff report 2017-39 regarding accessibility in the Cheltenham Badlands. Approved upon consent. Staff report 2017-43 regarding review of the feasibility of implementing an urban tree bylaw within the town of Caledon, held by Councillor Shaughnessy. Staff report 2017-45 regarding a request for support for a manufacturer's limited liquor sales license for Badlands Brewing Company. Approved upon consent. Staff report 2017-46 regarding Connect to Innovate funding application partnership. Mayor Thompson. Staff report 2017-47 regarding Kennedy Road rehabilitation from Old Base Line to King Street. Councillor Shaughnessy. Staff report 2017-31 regarding tax collectors' role adjustments made under Section 354, 357, and 358 of the Municipal Act 2001. Approved upon consent. Staff report 2017-16 regarding 2017 property tax ratios. Approved upon consent. Staff report 2017-33 regarding annual treasurer's statement on development charge reserve funds as of December 31st, 2016. Approved upon consent. Staff report 2017-40 regarding audited reserves and reserve fund balances for 2016. Approved upon consent. Staff report 2017-31 regarding 2016 lease financing agreement summary report. Approved upon consent. Staff report 2017-44 regarding 2016 year-end operating budget variance report. It's approved upon consent. Staff report 2017-41 regarding 2016 treasurer's investment report. For
2016. Sorry. You said for 2017 treasurer's investment reports for 2016.
Oh, my apologies. I'm going to repeat that. Staff report 2017-41 regarding 2016 treasurer's investment report for the year 2016. My apologies. That's approved upon consent. Recommendations of advisory committees. Accessibility Advisory Committee report dated February 13, 2017. Approved upon consent. Accessibility Advisory Committee report dated February 23rd, 2017. Approved upon consent. Caledon Community Calton Council Community Golf Tournament Committee Report dated February 21st, 2017. It is approved upon consent. Recommendations from the Calton Council Community Golf Tournament Committee regarding 2016 CCCGT secondary grant disbursements. It is approved upon consent. Notices of motion. Notice of motion regarding artificial turf sports field for Johnson Sports Park from Councillor DeBoer. It is approved upon consent. Notice of motion regarding revenues and booking management for the Palgrave Community Facility, moved by Councillor Shaughnessy. Councillor Shaughnessy has held it. Notice of motion from Councillor Shaughnessy regarding revenue sharing of the Palgrave Equestrian Facility is held by the mover. Notice of motion regarding notices of motion. Councillor Shaughnessy. Notice of motion regarding question period is held by Councillor Shaughnessy. And the last notice of motion is regarding recorded votes, which is also held by Councillor Shaughnessy. Next is confidential staff reports. Confidential staff report 2017-2, re a proposed or pending acquisition or disposition of land by the municipality or local board, expropriated land, Simpson Road, Ward 5. It is approved upon consent. Confidential staff report 2017-6, re personal matters about an identifiable individual, including municipal or local board employees, 2017 Caledon Community Recognition Night Award selection is approved upon consent. Next, we will move on to delegations. I will call upon Mr. Jim Firth to approach the podium and provide a delegation concerning notice of motion, revenues and booking management for the Palgrave Community Facility. Please note that you have, according to the procedural bylaw, 10 minutes to provide your presentation. Mr. Firth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jim Firth, and I'm the past president of the Rotary Club of Palgrave. And I saw the Rotary Club mentioned in a motion by Councillor Shaughnessy. I thought it was a great opportunity for me to come and update Council on what the Rotary Club has been doing, along with responding to that motion. The Rotary Club of Palgrave has been in existence for 35 years. We are a small hamlet in Caledon, but a very, very active Rotary Club. We've contributed probably over $2 million into the local economy through our fundraising, giving back to local organizations, and we get some very proud members of our club. We had a presentation last week by one of our members of all the facilities we've helped to build within Palgrave, from the kitchens at the baseball park, the clock in Palgrave, Station Lands Park, the park at the pond skating and so on. So that's all through our active members that we have within the club. And we go about organizing a lot of community events. We organize a Terry Fox run, the Christmas tree lighting, and of course our Wines of the World. So it's good for me to spread the message of our Rotary Club and what we've continued to accomplish within Palgrave. Now, specifically to the motion raised by Councillor Shaughnessy, when the community center was being considered, the Rotary Club was at some of the meetings and a participant in the meetings, and at the same time, our home at the Orange Lodge was being disposed of, so we had to find a new location. At the time, I don't believe the community center was available, so we went to the Caledon Estates Banquet Hall, which we continue to hold our meetings. It came back and eventually to consider moving into the community center. We looked at the community center. We did have a requirement to keep our meetings on a Wednesday night throughout the year. There's probably six nights throughout the year where we would not meet on a Wednesday, but a Wednesday night is sort of an important date for us. And at the same time, the cost that we would have to incur to cater our suppers and run our events was considered. And with all that taken into account, we decided to stay at the Caledon Estates Banquet Hall. They treat us exceptionally well. We don't have to worry about organizing meals and catering. They look after all that for us. And we get our Wednesday night. So we're quite happy to be there at the Caledon Estates Banquet Hall. If it came back around again to consider going to the community center, we would certainly take that under advisement. We'd go back to our members and ask, and we'd have to look at the costs from what we spend now, what the cost difference would be, and of course access to Wednesday nights would be very important for us. So right now we're very happy where we are. We do run our Wines at a World event June 24th this year, if you haven't got the announcement already. And the park does a great job of accommodating us. We rent out the kitchen to do all of our food preparation. We set up our tents, so it's been a great host to what we do so far. And we're quite active there in the community and quite happy where we are. And yeah, if it came back around to considering the community center, we'd certainly take that under advisement. So I just wanted to clarify that if anybody had any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Firth. Are there any members of council who have questions for the presenter? Councillor DeBoer.
Thanks, Jim, for taking the time to come. And with respect to Wines of the World, are you looking at using the indoor riding facility, or are you still continuing with the tents?
We have a good system so far with the tents and being outdoors. We've considered going indoors. We'd have to kind of rethink how we brand it and decorate it and host the event, and maybe we get bored out of doing what we're doing and we'd reconsider in the future, but so far we're quite happy with what we're doing. It works. It's a good formula for us.
And it's a good location of the old parking,
yes.
And it's actually better now than in a flat parking lot than on the side of the hill.
Yes, this is quite good, actually. Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you for taking time, Jim.
Thank you, Councillor DeBoer. Councillor Shaughnessy.
Hello, and thank you for coming. Okay, so my question to you is, because I'd been speaking to other Rotary members, was this problem with the Palgrave Community Facility was that you couldn't get it consistently throughout the whole year?
Yeah, that was certainly through you, Chairman. That was one of our considerations. We took that into consideration. We could ask our members if they wanted to change meeting nights. They weren't in a big favor of that. Having a good option available for us, the discussion didn't go very far when we actually brought it up. So the Wednesday nights are important. The cost, the operation are very important as well. Yeah.
So what kind of cost are we talking? Sorry, I don't know. I've never tried to rent it. Do you remember what you were quoted to rent it for the night?
I do not remember that. We pay $18 per member in the evening for the meals, essentially. So we go to the banquet hall. They provide the meals. Within that, it covers the food and the rental and so on. So we pay about $500, maybe a little less than that, per meeting. And from that, that's the meals and I presume whatever they charge for the banquet service as well. Yeah.
So you said that you didn't really want to change off the Wednesday night. Could you have rented it on a Thursday or Friday night, or is that just, or you're just used to doing it on the Wednesday nights?
No.
I can't remember. My sister was a member of Palgrave Rotary, actually. I'm not sure if you were a president.
I was not there, no.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah.
Anyway. We have 35 years of inertia in our club.
Yep.
And Wednesday nights showing up for dinner is hard to change people from doing that, so... I don't know if they would consider going to a different night, but certainly they were not in favor of moving there.
So it was about consistency and being able to use it every Wednesday night throughout
right.
the year.
Yeah. In the short time that I've been there, we've had to go through, I think, 3 caterers. So it's a problem for us to keep trying to cater the event as well,
right.
Yeah, the dinners. Yeah.
Good. Okay. Nope, that's what I needed to know. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Shaughnessy. Councillor DeBoer.
I think, Jim, some of the costs, I think, that when you talked about, you said it was going to cost you more. It wasn't necessarily the room that was costing you more. It's the entire package and the entire evening with bringing in a caterer.
That's correct, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Because I think that's very important. And I believe there was some discussion around Tuesdays.
Yeah, we would have to find a time to move, and they weren't big on moving. So we consider any other day on the calendar. But most of the Rotary clubs do... Monday, Tuesday, Wednesdays, not usually later and on in the week. Yeah.
Yeah, Thursdays. So, and I think that the solution that you guys have is great for the restaurant because, they're part of our community too, as far as, and then having an evening there, and that's good for them as far as running a business. So,
yeah.
I think it works. It's a good solution. I think I'm glad that you guys came up with it, and I think it works well. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor DeBoer. I have no more. Councillors who wish to speak, so I want to thank you, Mr. Firth, for
Great.
Coming out and presenting to us today.
Great. Thank you.
I now would like to call upon Mr. John Rutter to approach the podium to provide a delegation concerning staff report 2017-46 regarding Connect Innovate Funding Application Partnership. Please note, Mr. Rutter, that according to the procedural bylaw, you are provided 10 minutes for your delegation. Welcome.
Thank you. Unfortunately, I don't have any typed out thing for the clerk because the majority of my being up here are just questions. Anyway, Chair, Council, thank you for this opportunity. This is a very highly technical, as everybody knows, report. Technology and I don't get along very well together. But I would be amiss if I didn't stand up here and represent my wife and I and other residents of Terracotta, which is where I live, when I saw this report. And it itemized four communities that were identified by the Canadian federal government as being underserved currently. The heck is the page? Sorry. Those communities were identified as Bell Fountain, Campbell Cross, Sand Hill, and Ballycroy. Now, I'll tell you, I had my work cut out for me to find where Ballycroy was. Everybody I spoke to hadn't got a clue. Well, yes, I saw you yesterday, Councillor, and I should have asked. Anyway, finally a guy at the Cheltenham General Store said, oh, yeah, I delivered oil up that way, like, years ago. See, so he told me what it was or where it was. And one of my questions is, everything that I read in this report says four communities in Caledon. Well, geographically and technically, Ballycroy is not in Caledon. It's in Dufferin County. Being a Caledon taxpayer and being a Caledon underserved household, I just have a problem with identifying it as a community in Caledon when, in fact, it isn't. I guess that, no other way to put it. And when Sand Hill is identified as a community, then maybe it was at one point in time. Now it's a crossroad. It's Airport Road and King Street. There's a car dealership there, and there is a dog grooming the business, and a bunch of farmhouses. I guess what I'm saying is, yes, I did have a conversation with a gentleman this morning that helped me try to understand what this report is all about, but I did want to come and get things on record in the respect that I do understand that these communities were identified by the Government of Canada. However, in 2015, the town of Caledon completed a broadband gap analysis, whatever that is. I guess one of my questions to the gentleman behind me is, at that point in time, was it bought up that Ballycroy is not in Caledon? And was it bought up to the fact that we have so many communities in Caledon, Terracotta being one of them, Valleyfield being another one, where three-quarters of the community is serviced with this, whatever this is, and the other quarter isn't? I guess my second question is, why are these communities not being completed to facilitate a complete community, which is a term that is used very often here at Council, rather than going helter-skelter across the whole municipality of Caledon to start new spaces? Now, through you, Chair, to our very resourceful regional councillor, can you help me out here, or can you offer any input, or do you do I talk to the IT guy?
So I'll just interject.
Yeah.
So the questions that you're asking are being compiled. And I understand that you've also spoken with staff on this, but
yes.
Every question that you're asking here is being compiled, and answers will be provided to you based on the questions that you've offered.
Well, can the IT guy not answer me now so it's on record?
Well, when the report comes forward, then he will certainly be here for that and can answer that question as we discuss it in a fulsome way at the time when it comes forward. So it is coming back as an item on the agenda today?
What is?
That report.
Oh, okay. So I don't get answered right now?
It's very short order. It's about 5 minutes, I'm told, that it will be. So your questions, and we will make sure that those get addressed when the report comes forward.
Okay. I'm just confused as to why we're not addressing communities that are half done rather than start new ones and addressing communities that aren't in Caledon. Okay.
Okay. No, don't go anywhere because we do have a question from council. Mayor Thompson.
John, thank you for coming, and I understand your frustration, and if I could have had terracotta as one of the first pops, and that's, I think that'll be explained, where Armando will explain this. The challenge that we're having, and to me, like yourself, it's been a huge education for me as well. And those areas, what we're trying to do is connect the small villages and hamlets to like where the urban areas are. The residential parts of the urban areas do have high-speed broadband to a certain extent. It's not great, but it exists, versus the areas that you're talking about don't. Your questions are very valid, but I think when and I've had discussions with staff, and I'm also part of the SWIFT initiative, and I think I'll let Armando explain how SWIFT and this will work together, which is the part that Caledon's part of. But in order for us to build the infrastructure, we have to have these key points, and then you draw the lines. And if you look at a full map, and I think Armando is going to produce us a map here today to explain, this is the very first start. Hopefully we can get the funding for this, because I'm really hoping that we have ability to get it five times. So if this is the first start, we start filling in the gaps, and all our communities are going to get connected. And it is crucial. This is the only way we can do it is through fiber, because towers and everything else are not going to work. As you know, Niagara Escarpment, the Oak Ridges Moraine, and everything we've got, it's completely frustrating. And you know what? I know Councillor McClure and I, we can't work from home because we just do not have reliable broadband. So, by God, if I could do it in my area, I would. But it's a challenge, and I understand your frustration.
Mayor Thompson, sorry to interject. It's questions of the presenter, and if there's more discussion, we can do it at the time of the report.
And I totally get that, and I was waiting for you to nail me on that. But
you're going to continue.
But I think out of understanding the frustration of Mr. Rutter. So my question back to you, Mr. Rutter, is, or where I'm going to go is, I think we're all in the same boat here, but what I'm saying is I think, to answer your question, I honestly think we're trying to connect the different areas, and I think we'll let the presenter explain where we're wanting to go. And after that, if there's more questions, we'll work to try to get those answered.
If I can just ask one more question. I got a minute and 12 seconds left.
Go ahead.
When Armando comes up here to say his thing, I guess my other concern is, again, the representing not only myself but other residents of Terracotta, if this opportunity is missed with this $500 million that's been granted by the Government of Canada, then when is the next opportunity going to be? Is it going to be 5 years, 10 years? Does anybody know?
I'm supposed to ask questions only, but I think Armando's going to explain that. Okay. But that's part of the SWIFT initiative was we have a 10-year plan how to get everybody connected. This is just a faster way to help people in the mid-run. So I think we'll let Armando kind of explain this, and we'll try to get those questions answered, but it's a good question.
Okay, that's fair. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Rutter. Thank you, Mayor Thompson. An additional delegation request has been made. That's section 8.9 of the procedural bylaw be waived to permit a delegation to be heard by Sherry Biroshi concerning notices of motion regarding procedural bylaw matters. I have a move by Councillor Groves, seconded by Councillor DeBoer. All in favor? Carried. Ms. Biroshi. Please approach the podium to provide your delegation regarding notice of motion. According to the procedural bylaw, you provided 10 minutes for you to speak. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Mezzapelli, and good afternoon, Mayor Thompson, members of council, and members of the public. My name is Sherry Biroshi, and I'm a resident of Caledon. I'm standing here before you today, and I can't tell you how confused I am, and I'm sure others feel the same way. I apologize, but I am extraordinarily tired. I stayed up till about 2 o'clock this morning, and I was up at 6. The procedural bylaw is one of the most important documents, as we all know. Back in the fall of 2015, there were drafts, there were reports, and an open house, not only for the councillors, but for members of the public to give input. It was very unfortunate that no one attended the open house but myself. The process was done. The one result was public question period was taken out of Caledon in the agenda package. Over the year has gone by, and after many discussions with friends, neighbours, and other residents of Caledon, some I don't even really know, even people outside of Caledon were shocked and disappointed to find out this part of the agenda, the public question period, was removed. In a memorandum that was submitted from the clerk's office as an addendum to the agenda for today, and I quote, could significantly impact not only transparency levels, but also the administration of meetings, including technical resources. Words like this could cause fearfulness, and I understand that, and I know that there's efficiency that wants to happen at this table. I support that, actually. I did some history digging in regards to the procedural bylaw in Caledon, and I'm so glad I kept things. There's a report that's dated January 2012, and it's an update on the on the procedural bylaw. This is the report right here. And it clearly says, update to the procedural bylaw. Here is the bylaw that passed it as well. I want to note one thing. That's 2 years into the term of that council, 2010 to 2014, the council at the time, including five of today's councillors that sit on this current council, voted in favour of the update. Yes, that's right. It got changed with no complete review or pursued, as stated in today's memorandum. Just an update. It also states in this order, older report, further, it encourages transparency in the council process because questions from the public are geared toward items that are listed on the agenda at hand. And I do support that. It does need to stay what's on the agenda. The key word here is update. You are able to update if you choose to. Public question period is being more transparent. It creates good dialogue, it creates engagement, and it gives clarity from the debate that happened during that day. We as the members of public have no chance to, let's say a councillor brought something up that we didn't think of, or a staff member brought something up, we can either encourage it, support it, not support it, get more clarity on it, just engagement. Sometimes we might not like the hard questions or concerns, but as our elected officials, the fire might get hot. But complete honesty, transparency, that is the water that will cool the fire, even put the fire out. The choice is all of ours, as Caledon as a whole. Let's talk about transparency. I remember on December 8, 2015, the council meeting. I believe it was 1 hour and 50 minutes into the meeting, and I verified this on the audio, and I took it from my notes. Mayor Thompson, you told us, along with your elected officials, that Brampton took out public question period in their agendas. I was shocked to hear this, but thought to myself, okay, I accept that, and I also believed it. I came home that night and pondered on it. I actually pondered on it for a few days. Something was just not sitting right in my gut. So I checked the City of Brampton's agenda and discovered it was never taken out of the agenda. And more importantly, public question period is still part of their agenda today. I further checked the City of Mississauga and discovered they also, too, have public question period. If the two other municipalities have public question period and are part of the region appeal, why can't Caledon? We're the smallest in population, but bigger in geographically. I hear time and time again the region does things this way. Example, the format of the agenda on the Caledon website. Unfortunately, you cannot access reports solely. You must download the whole agenda package. Even Mayor Thompson and others have experienced this problem. The clerk advised that we were dealing with a new program, and that's great. I'm glad to see the updates. However, it does bring up barriers. But remember, most parts of Caledon do not have high-speed internet and the gigabyte capacity to download a 200 to 300-page document. Mayor Thompson is in the midst of changing this, and I agree with the idea, and I support him on this. So tell me, with this new program that changed, did it create more efficiency? Did it help others read reports? Actually, what it did, it created barriers, made things harder a little bit. Mayor Thompson just said that. Change, progressiveness. I want you to keep these words in your head. My point is this. The three municipalities that make up the region appeal and two of them never got rid of public question period, but Caledon did. I could never understand why. Progressive. Then there was a final draft of Caledon's procedural bylaw to be voted on. There was much discussion on things on all sides and valid points from everybody. And we need to respect it and we need to move on. We need to give it a chance. During the process, the time I delegated probably four or more times in this process. Listened to what others had to say, attended the open house, and when the final draft came, I might not have supported it totally, but I choose to give it a chance. I also thank the clerk's office for all the discussions and the emails. It was actually a great process that way. One of the counselors at this table said it during a meeting, if I get an inquiry from a member of public, it is my job to seek through. Yes, that counselor is totally correct and is a good representation of the public and that you as elected officials are elected to do. But emails and private discussions are not on the record unless you file an FOI, which costs money. But public question period does give opportunities to have on the record. And it even then might not even, you might even not get anybody at public question period. I supported public question period a long time ago. I support it today, and I will continue to support it. It's 15 minutes out of your day in each meeting, and it doesn't hurt council or the administration to conduct meetings. If anything, it gives more transparency. Public question period is a good opportunity, not a negative impact, and some might want to believe. We learn, become better leaders, but most of all, gives the people of Caledon a say besides delegating. It's teamwork. It's open. It's an open dialogue. More importantly, it gives a chance for the public to gain clarity or ask questions relating to the debate that happened prior to when the public question engagement, communication, and transparency. Again, progressive. Further in the memorandum, the clerk's office staff, I quote, staff have not had enough time to completely consider all the impacts and proposed changes. Now, yes, she is right. As far as the technical side, I do agree. It does need to be looked into. I also agree that I don't know if it's fair, and this is where I ponder. Council and the members of public, we all never have to get time to read a full, complete agenda package, understand, and possibly ask questions to the staff or to our councillors to ask staff to seek information and to get information back by 12 noon on the Monday prior to the committee meeting and council meeting to ward a possible delegation or not to delegate. So truthfully, who really has the time? As you have heard in my delegation toward the word progressive or progressiveness, political meaning is to change the old and become the new or implement the new. Be more efficient, create openness, benefits to all. That's what it says. Well, there's another meaning to it. The memorandum also states, quote, could significantly impact not only transparency. Now remember, in the other report that I held up, it actually encourages transparency. So, and five of you sat on that council and approved it. This is where I get confused. So now my question is to extent, what is the new versus the old? The words that are used here is to create doubt in this memorandum or something, but perhaps barriers or perhaps fairness to all. Really think about this. Take some time to ponder before answering this. To bring back public question period in our agenda is really no financial problem. It is an extra 15 minutes of time. Is this council willing to amend or update and bring it back? The extra 15 minutes on the agenda is worth it. You will be amazed at how much support you might get. Sometimes in life, including governing, it is better to leave things alone. Don't try to fix something that's not broken. Public question period was and always has been part of Caledon's history and on their agenda. There is a history there, like I said. Also, it's still part of Brampton and Mississauga's. Getting back to the progressive, to change a new way of doing things to take away. Has anyone ever heard of, quote, New World Order? Yes, that's right, the New World Order. Government wants you to believe it's a good thing, but it's truly not. It takes away, and the words that are used plant seeds of doubt, worrisome, puts in barriers, words like significantly impacts, transparency. The memorandum that is before you today does exactly that. I would encourage you all to do some extensive research on this. This is about losing our freedoms, democracy, gaining control to the powers at hand, not the people. I've done some serious, serious research in this for many, many years. Remember our fallen soldiers that fought for us, gave us the freedom of speech, freedom of democracy, freedom to make our choices. This is your chance to implement something that was taken away. This shows good leadership, creates another way for the public to engage, learn, seek clarity, create transparency, and adds democracy. Mayor Thompson, councillors, please bring back public question period. Support this small update to the procedural bylaw. It is a change for the better, a small change, not a big one. And those small changes create much success. Please support the motion that is before you today. Caledon will become a better place, and you will be surprised on the goodness that will happen that comes out of this. Thank you for waiving for the procedural bylaw and letting me delegate today. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Ms. Birosian. There is.
I apologize for going over a few minutes.
That's fine. Councillor Shaughnessy.
Thank you very much for delegating. Appreciate it. Would you say, now you seem to be speaking to more question period. Are you saying that the transparency and accountability is across all three motions, or are you only speaking to the one motion, or have you thought about that?
No, I did not think about that, number one. And number two, I was focusing on the motion coming forward to implement public question period back on the agenda.
Okay. Filing the delegation, how long did it take you to write that and put that together?
I started it when my husband walked through the door last night. He asked me what I was doing. I told him I was up till 1 this morning, and again, I was at it from 6 till 11:30, and then I went out of shower and came here.
So a lot of time.
I'm very passionate about my freedoms. I have a grandfather that fought and died in the war for my freedoms. I grew up at Moss Park Armories. Yeah. It's very dear to my heart when I listen to those veterans. I have close friends that their fathers are veterans. I don't want our democracy being taken away. I am very aware of the New World Order, and I think everybody really needs to look at this because it is coming. So whether you want to believe it or not, it is.
In this motion that I wrote up about public question period, it used to be at the end of the day, and I had complaints that people felt that they couldn't make a difference. Would you say it would be easier, because you do come to council, would you say it'd be easier for you to come to council and just ask a couple of questions, and then that would possibly influence either staff or council? Because I'm suggesting that it actually moves up to the top of the agenda under delegations as opposed to the end of the day when all the decisions are made.
Ooh. I have two answers to that, if I may. One, I really like listening to members of council with staff in their of the report. And it doesn't matter what the report is saying or what it's applying to. Whether it be financial, planning, recreation, whatever. I quite enjoy the dialogue. I think it's good. I think this council needs work, but who doesn't? Let's be real. Who doesn't? None of us are perfect. I learn things through those dialogues that I don't know, and that's what sparks me at the public question period and why I was so passionate of not being taken away. If a councillor brought something forward and asked a staff member, because it either they were misunderstanding something in the report or whatever and wanted more detail, you got clarity through staff. We, as the public, don't get that opportunity. So when public question period does come, if it is implemented, we can stand here and go, Councillor so-and-so brought this up, staff asked it, and thank you so much. But further, has this been considered, or just thank you very much? So, you know, I know it's a balancing act. I don't know whether I want to do public question period prior to listening to the debate. I don't think I would personally support that, but that's just me. Others might.
So are you asking me that you want me to amend this and put it at the end of the day? Because my consultation with people said that they didn't like it at the end of the day because they couldn't make a difference to the decision.
I guess the okay, so I get where you're coming from.
It has to go someplace.
It has to go someplace. Okay. So I guess the question that council needs to ask themselves with staff, and maybe this needs to be, you know, further discussed and debated with input from the stakeholders, which is us as the public, and that is, you know, what is the end goal here? The end goal here is, from what I'm hearing and from what I've always read and heard verbally, is transparency, communication, and engagement. How do you do that? You know, yeah, you can tell me to come and delegate, but once I delegate, that's it. My voice is shut. Decisions are made. I have to walk out the door. I can't bring anything up. So how do you change that? Public question period? You know, can I maybe go with do 5 reports, have public question period, do another 5 reports, do another question period? I don't know. I'm just throwing ideas out there. I don't sit in your chairs. You guys do. We trust you to make good decisions. Taking it out totally, in my mind, was not a good decision. And I have my personal reasons for it based on my history with the democracy and the people that fought for our democracy. So it is a stickler. I don't know how other councillors feel about it. Where would you like to see it if it got put back in? Let's have the debate. Let's have the conversation. I'm open to it.
Thank you. Thank you. And we will have the debate. I held the motion, and just let you know that Mississauga does it after the delegations and Brampton does it at the end of the day. Everybody does it differently.
Exactly.
And some people will say, I like it at the top of the day where I can provide some quick input to that council and staff will hear me. Others want to come in and talk about it after the fact, but I don't know. I just don't get talking about it after the fact if the decision's already made. So, but anyways, we'll have that debate, but thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Councillor Shaughnessy. Councillor Downey.
Thank you. Through you, Chair. To Ms. Brioche, thank you very much for your presentation. I'm just wondering, and along the same lines as Councillor Shaughnessy, if you feel that you have less of an opportunity or more of an opportunity after the vote has been taken. From my personal opinion, and the reason that I supported removing it in the first place was because I felt that committee structure, just as we're doing right now, is a stronger opportunity for you to come and communicate with us. I personally would rather hear you speak before I have to make a decision than after I've already made it.
So just to make sure I understand what you're saying, Councillor Downey, is because the ratification goes to council. Am I understanding that correctly?
Public question period was on the agenda, the council meeting agenda, at the very end of the agenda.
Right.
So why would I want to hear from my residents after I've voted and after I've heard the report from staff and after I've heard all the I would rather hear you delegate first and then debate the, like, I want to hear from my residents first.
Okay.
And then debate the matter and then make a decision. So from my personal
It's a good point. I see exactly where you're coming from.
What we are doing right now is exactly the way the process should be. We're hearing from you now, and then we're going to debate. That's going to come forward. We're going to debate it, and then we're going to make a decision having had your say. So you've had your say.
I did have my say through a delegate process, not through public question period. So now my point in my delegation was that I can come and delegate, and I can, like you said, you know, we can, whoever that may be, take me out of the equation, okay? We can come as the people and delegate, present whatever. Then what happens is the report is brought forward, there is discussions going on, there's things that could be sparked through conversations from staff to you that we're not aware of, A, that you make some very good valid points or staff makes very good valid points, okay? We're not privy to that information sometimes, and sometimes we are. When public question period, if you look at it from where I'm coming from as well, and I'm just looking for a collaborative way of complete communication, this is not about who's right and wrong, then I can walk up here at public question period going, you know what, thank you, staff, for bringing that up, because I never thought of that. And it does, it might even change my opinion on a staff report because of a learning process. Mm-hmm. Or I might say, well, yeah, you did say that in the staff report. You're validating. However, like I did today, there's a report and a bylaw that was passed that tells me the complete opposite than what happened during the procedural bylaw. So this is where the confusion starts. One says it does welcome transparency, the procedural bylaw and the memorandum today during that process does not. So I am very confused, and it's a hard thing to deal with. I just want to see more engagement. I can tell you, I'm going to be really honest with you all. I know people in this community that when I said public question period got taken up, because they were asking questions, I said, well, it's okay, public question period. You have to delegate now, so I would encourage you to go to delegate. What do you mean public question period got taken? How could they do that? That's not right. That's taking our democracy. Whoa. You still have an opportunity. So I'm trying to support you as well in the new process. However, there is that small part that's missing, and that is public question period. So that's all I'm asking.
Right. So then would you say that a better consultation with the community is needed?
I think there's improvement in many areas, and I think it's doable. It depends on how much this council wants to do. That's your decision. I can't force you, but people can't force you. We can ask that of you all. We would hope that it would happen. There's some situations in the past 2 years that has come up, and I'm going to be honest with you, and you know this. It's not a secret. There is one particular one right now that I can't tell you how disappointed I am. And it would have been shut down instantaneously if people chose to shut it down. But that's not happening. It continued. And I don't want to play games like that. I want to help. I want to move on. I want to good things. I want to brag about Caledon. I don't want to sit there and go, oh, wow, I've had my issues. And we all have issues, but issues can be worked through to solutions. How bad do we want those solutions is the question.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Downey. Councillor Groves.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just following on that, I'm just going to take us back a few years ago when, with respect to Councillor Downey's question and Councillor Shaughnessy, where on the agenda it should be placed. And I will tell you, we had a budget process. It was an evening session, and a residence group came out, and they wanted to provide input on the budget. Council debated the budget, passed the budget, and then question period came forward at the end. Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? The residents got up and left because their point was, what does it matter now that we come up here and we say what we need to say because you've already passed the budget?
That's right.
So I guess that's where Councillor Shaughnessy is coming from, and Councillor Downey, is for the public to have an opportunity to express concerns, raise questions, whatever it is, on anything that's in the agenda before a decision is made. So,
I'm not going to argue that, Councillor Groves.
But that's where I think these two councillors
are.
Yeah,
absolutely, 100%. But there is the other side of the coin.
There is also the other side, but the public sees this as part of democracy. So I'm going to leave it there. I will be supporting Councillor Shaughnessy's motion, and I will speak to the motion when it comes forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Groves. Thank you, Ms. Brewer.
Thank you.
Rob?
Councillor Shaughnessy.
Thank you very much. Mr. Rutter is here, John Rutter, and he would like to speak to the same thing that Ms. Broche spoke to. Could we just waive the procedural bylaw to allow him to speak, please?
Sorry, to speak to the procedural bylaw?
Yes. What Sherry just spoke to, Sherry Brochet, or are we going to wait until the motion comes forward? Would you like to hear from him now, or would you like to hear when?
Well, we're in delegation, so I'd prefer if we were going to.
That's fine.
Do it, unless you know the question, or you can just include
it
in the discussion.
No, I don't know the question.
Mr. Rutter, do you, before you get up, you have a, you would like to delegate to ask a question about that particular? Okay, so then we're going to need a. Councillor Groves, Councillor McClure, that section 8.9 of the procedural bylaw be waived to permit a delegation to be heard by Mr. Rutter regarding notice of motion regarding procedural bylaw matters. All in favor? Carries. Mr. Rutter, if you'd like to approach the podium, you have 10 minutes to provide your presentation. And before you start, I've been pretty lenient. We are to ask questions of the presenter. Let's keep our comments and whatnot to the item when it comes before us. Thank you. Go ahead.
This is addressing a specific motion of Councillor Shaughnessy's about the reinstigating of the question and answer period. Okay. I am here in support of Councillor Shaughnessy's motion to reinstate the question and answer segment to the agenda of council meetings. I, along with many other Caledon residents, were shocked when we found out that in December 2015, this council voted to eliminate question and answer from council agendas. As usual, the community found out about this decision after the fact and were told that we could not do anything about it until after a period of 1 year had gone by. Well, a year has gone by. One of my concerns is, why was staff ever compiling a report about this in the first place? My understanding is that staff is directed by council. So can I assume that council did in fact request this report originally? One of my main arguments of the staff report seems to be that the question and answer in its past, one of the main arguments of the staff report seems to be that the question and answer in its past format was underused and abused, with what, 117 speakers and only 24 actual questions. Well, maybe that had something to do with the fact that the question and answer was at the end of each session. The way that meetings are going at the moment, who would blame residents for not waiting around for hours before they have an opportunity to say what's on their mind, which reinforces part of the motion which recommends moving the question and answer to the first part of the meeting. Plus, why would anybody want to talk about any item that had already been voted on? It has also been said that the question and answer was voted down because some other municipality had done so. There is a message here, and one which I fear you council members are all too often missing. That being, the Caledon is unique. Regarding decisions such as this, we should be judged and administered independently, regardless of what other councils do. As we speak, we are still a community where a deal can be sealed with a handshake, and a man's or lady's word is their bond. That is uniqueness. Taxpayers should have a chance to ask more questions at meetings. We should encourage engagement. Yes, you have replaced the question and answer with the delegation presentation format. I have experienced it, and I find it very confusing and somewhat on the formal side. I am convinced that this is not for the average taxpayer of Caledon. And at the end of the day, I don't get half my questions answered anyway. In conclusion, this council at this time, in my opinion, based on some recent unpopular rulings and decisions, is going through a period of mistrust and re-evaluation by Caledon residents. Let the approval of this motion be one step towards a healing and show that U.S. Council still actually believe and practice the policies of inclusion, transparency, and accountability which you all professed during the last election campaign. Remember, if a tractor gets a flat tire, you don't get rid of the tractor, you fix the tire. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rutter. I don't have any questions of council, so I thank you for your delegation.
Thank you.
Next on the agenda are staff reports, which were held. The council member who held the report will be provided an opportunity to speak first. The first one that was held is staff report 2017-43 regarding review of the feasibility of implementing an urban tree bylaw within the town of Caledon. That an urban tree bylaw not be pursued at this time. I need a mover and a seconder. Mayor Thompson moves. Seconder, Councillor DeBoer. It was held by Councillor Shaughnessy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick question. I don't think I saw it covered in this report. The report was extensive. We talked more about woodlots and stuff. My residents have had a concern, and I've run into it a couple of times already, where we're talking about canopies of roads have been destroyed. Not on the road allowance, but actually just inside the fence on people's property, and has completely taken out the whole look and feel of the community. Is this something that you looked into? Because I've had a couple of recent examples of that.
Mr. Stafford.
Through you, Chair Mazzapelli, to Councillor Shaughnessy. That is something that we looked into that was encompassed in the entire report. So that specific issue, no. But in order to achieve a situation where you would be able to keep that from happening on private property, you would need to go through an urban tree process. So in order to do that, it would take extensive resources. I understand certainly the concern, but to actually put in place a tool to control that on people's private property currently would take extensive resources for the town to implement. And that's why staff at this time, it consider it as an excessive tool. So I can certainly understand where that concern comes from, but it would take a significant amount of resources to implement something to control that at this time.
So in our official plan, we have actually in Caledon on our road, further north, where actually Silver Creek, the canopy is already protected under the official plan. Maybe we looked at a report that was too wide, too big, and we should have been looking at actually those smaller complaint issues that us as councillors always get. Because we understand that the large woodlots are already protected in many different ways. But I just had somebody take down 30 or 40 trees down Shaw's Creek and totally ruined the wonderful old, and you can't replace 40, 50, 60, 70, 80-year-old trees. I mean, it takes a long time for them to come back. And that is the kind of issue as a councillor I've had. So, and I don't know if anybody else has
had.
Can
I get Mr. Goder to respond?
Thank you. So through the chair to Councillor Shaughnessy, we do have a woodland tree bylaw in effect.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what that bylaw does regulate, is exactly what you're describing. So if you do have, and we do lay charges on a regular basis for the woodland trees bylaw, so if you do have any instances where you have those issues, please let bylaw know and we can investigate.
Bylaw did come back to me and they said that they were well within their right. They had no ability to protect the trees on the guy's property. So, and they were taken right down, not on the town's allowance, actually just to inside the fence. So
So through the chair.
So now I'm confused because I was told one thing by bylaw and said they had no ability to stop him from doing that, because we're not talking a woodlot, we're talking a row of trees, right? Quite different than a woodlot.
So we could probably have a conversation offline just to understand that particular situation. I think I recall where you're discussing. And I can't think specifically. I recall that issue. We can talk a little bit after.
Yeah. So if anything, I don't think this bylaw is going to pass, my guess is, but I would certainly like us as a municipality to look at those tree-lined roads that we have out here in the country and see what we can do, something smaller that's actually going to look after the trees down the side of the road when they're actually still on private property, but they still provide the canopy going right across the road. So if that's direction, whatever, but I think we need to look at that. Okay.
Thank you, Councillor Shanji. And my apologies to Mr. Trafford, I mispronounced your surname. Did you want to respond or?
Thank you. Through you, Chair Mazzapelli, to Councillor Shaughnessy. With respect to that, I think that you have a correct interpretation. There are circumstances where that happens. I can't say for sure. My guess why bylaw could not enforce that particular case is that the woodland bylaw does have very stringent specifications. So the property has to be a certain size. It has to be a certain amount of trees in order to qualify as a woodlot and be applied. So it's possible that that property may not have applied under that bylaw, which is why they wouldn't have enforced. I think that you bring up a good point, though, because the woodland bylaw does cover woodlands, but it has specific provisions as what a woodland is, whereas an urban tree bylaw like this, in our experience from our research, is quite extensive. It's applied in municipalities where preserving trees is a serious issue because they're heavily urbanized. So I think that those individual cases are important, but an urban tree bylaw is not necessarily the appropriate tool for us at this time to deal with those individual small cases because it is so extensive.
Thank you, Mr. Trafford. Mayor Thompson.
Thank you. I do support the report, and I do know the tree bylaw does work, and I do know especially in fence lines. But there's been some challenges that we've had to deal as of late. 2013, we had a nice storm that has damaged quite a few of these trees, and it's pretty extensive. And we've watched over time. Now we've got disease in those trees because we didn't act and cut them down when we should have. The other challenge we do have is there's a lot of ash trees through our municipality, and they're all infected with the emerald ash borer, and the only way you can control it is to cut the trees down. Way I look at it I think this is what's causing a lot of this that's happening right at the moment. Also, hydro, and I can tell you I've been through this, is hydro has the ability and the authority, if they find any tree of any threat, even on private property, they'll cut it down to that it's almost obliterated. And they have the right to do it, and we have no they supersede anything we try to do. I think the bylaw works well, and I can tell you as a counselor, even dealing with farmers who have had to do with fence lines, have had to deal with bylaw, have had to obtain a permit to do what they need to do. I think it works well. I think we're quite progressive in this bylaw compared to a lot of municipalities that have nothing. Mr. Trafford, I think you did a good job on this, but I do understand, but I can tell you out there, we do have some huge concerns with a lot of trees that have not recovered from that ice storm of December of 2013, which is a real challenge. And I do know even we've had to take two trees down on the farm last year that we, you know, oaks that we were hoping were going to recover. And, when the crop came off, we've had to take them down because it's just the right thing to do. But the challenge is what we should be doing is what more can we do to encourage, take these trees down, how can we reestablish tree lines and everything else? Maybe that's something we can look at in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. Councillor Downey.
Thank you, through you, Chair. To Mr. Trafford. The motion that I originally put on the floor for the urban tree bylaw was raised in response to concerns about the urban tree canopy in Bolton, specifically in the area that would potentially be designated the Heritage Conservation District. So we are running into issues where homes or heritage homes are listed, which puts up a red flag for developers, and then the developer then has the opportunity to demolish the home and the subsequent surrounding trees before the heritage property can be protected. So that was the impetus for that motion and our kind of downtown core and the street. So I guess I was a little bit disappointed to not see more of more leaning towards that within the report. And I appreciate the work that went into it. I think it was really, really good, and I appreciate the information coming from different areas as well. I did a little bit of my own in terms of Ottawa. My question is, when you mentioned resources to regulate and implement, are you speaking specifically to feet on the street, like bodies, bylaw officers going out to implement the bylaw, or are you talking about resources to set it up in-house?
Mr. Trafford.
Through you, Chair Mezzapelle, to Councillor Downey. To be honest, the report actually speaks more to after it's already set up. So there are resources that, you know, I didn't include them because it's internal to staff, but there would be resources required that would take more time to actually set this whole process up. But the report specifically speaks to once it's already set up, so not even including that, the staff time that it would take to investigate all the complaints that right now we don't need to investigate because we only control on woodlots, as well as the fact that we would need an arborist on staff, the costs that come from that. So the report very much speaks to if we did in fact do this, how much would it cost us, which would be exponential as time goes by.
Okay, I appreciate that. And as I mentioned, I thought it was a good report. There was a few numbers that I wasn't quite in agreement with in terms of the arborist cost. I know that the Heritage Committee hired an arborist, and that price came in at $251 after tax, so not anywhere close to the numbers that you'd referenced. However, as well as some of the numbers I looked into through the City of Ottawa, in terms of their population, with being comparable and also being like urban-rural area, Kanata South, Ward 23, is population 37,000. Over the last year, they've only had 26 requests for from households on private property for the permits for trees. So I'm not sure that those 26 requests would require an extra staff member. However, I understand that, you know, that would shift amongst bylaw officers. I guess at this point, I would ask to refer this report back to staff and get a little bit more detail in terms of potentially narrowing the bylaw down to the settlement boundaries specific to the HCDs. Or, if we want to get really detailed about it, just the settlement areas and the villages and hamlets. And I think, as we've heard earlier today, Caledon is unique. We have a cross-section of urban and rural, and I know that I deal with a lot of residents in high-density areas that where the bylaws that we have don't apply to high-density areas or can't apply. So, you know, maybe it's an opportunity for us to
Councillor Downey,
shift our thinking.
Sorry. Are you proposing a motion to refer this back?
Yes, I am.
So do you have all the language of what you'd want included in that referral?
No, but I can
Okay, and a seconder to the referral would be Councillor Groves. We'll just give the clerk a moment to draft something.
Could we take a five-minute recess?
That would be great.
Council be okay with a five-minute recess?
Thank you.
So we'll adjourn for 5 minutes. We will report back at 13 past 2. So Councillor Downey has actually an amendment to the report. It's not a referral. It's an amendment to the report. So it's Councillor Groves, you still seconding the amendment? Yes? Yes? That the following paragraph be added, that staff investigate the options available to protect trees in a proposed Heritage Conservation District and report back. Yes? Okay, so it's moved by Councillor Downey, seconded by Councillor Groves. I'm going to clear the board of the previous speakers. And if there's any that wish to speak to the amendment, I see Councillor DeBoer.
So we're going to carry with staff's position, not implement an urban tree bylaw, but just looking at
Go ahead.
So what we're doing is we're going to support the recommendation in the report that says we're not going to implement an urban tree bylaw, but have them look specifically at this one issue.
That's how I read the amendment, and I believe that's how staff understand it.
Okay. I think there was a comment earlier about trees out into the rural area. We do have the tree cutting bylaw, and it was worked on, and I think the Federation, Peel Federation of Agriculture, were quite involved in the development of that bylaw, wanting to ensure that there was some abilities to manage trees on the property. So we're not looking at making changes to that bylaw.
Okay. Looking at the amendment, it specifically identifies proposed HCDs. I don't know that that is what you're mentioning. So I don't know that there's any conflict.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Councillor Groves.
I have a question, and it's probably for the clerk. I don't, because I'm unclear. So I didn't support the HCD. So am I sort of contradicting myself supporting this amendment?
Mr. Goder.
So through the chair to Councillor Groves, I can't speak on your behalf. However, this amendment is just asking staff to look at options of protecting trees in a proposed heritage district. So if there was ever one that existed, how we would look at protecting trees in those areas.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Shaughnessy.
Thank you very much. Just wanted to clarify, the one I was talking about wasn't actually a farming property. It was an estate property. And I think to cover our farmers, they probably have to have a number, right, Alan? Right. So I just didn't want Councillor DeBoer think it was a farmer, and then I was trying to stop him from cutting down his trees. It was Ward 1 has a lot of, unfortunately, we have a lot of estates that were farm properties, and now they're merely estates, and this is one of the results of that. So it wasn't, I wanted to clarify that. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Shaughnessy. I have no other speakers, so we are going to vote on the amendment. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any against? The amendment carries. So now we have the motion as amended. So it was moved by Mayor Thompson, seconded by Councillor DeBoer. The motion as amended. All in favor? Any opposed? The amended motion carries. Thank you. The next item is staff report 2017-46 regarding Connect to Innovate funding application partnership. The letter of support be provided to Packet Works, Packet Tel Corporation, for an application to the Connect to Innovate CTI grant funding for the delivery of backbone fiber services to communities of Bellefontaine, Campbell's Cross, Sand Hill, and Ballycroy, and that upon successful award of the CTI grant funding to Packet Work, staff be authorized to identify and contract as necessary an anchor institution to consume internet services utilizing the new backbone fiber build, and that upon the successful award of the CTI grant funding to Packet Works, staff be supportive in principle of a long-term land lease or facility co-location arrangements to house internet points of presence infrastructure and report back to council accordingly. I need a mover and a seconder. Moved by Mayor Thompson, seconded by Councillor Downey. This was held by Mayor Thompson, and I just wanted to say I'm hoping that we can address Mr. Rutter's questions in this discussion. Mayor Thompson.
I was just wondering if I could get Armando to walk through his justification on the map. I think this will be very explanatory, and that's why I held it, is because I thought it'd be good to get a map so we visually can understand the reasoning why they need these different centers and why these are the first ones that we've selected.
And sure.
Mr. Navalli?
Yep, through the chair. So it's on. Can you hear me?
Yeah, maybe.
Oh, sorry. Is that better?
Yep.
Thank you. The choice in communities was not within the town of Caledon's control. They were selected through a process that the federal government went through. So in terms of where or how the towns were or the communities were selected, that was not us. However, if you look at the ones that were selected, although they may be intersections on the map, the routing of the fiber would benefit a good chunk of the town. So if you were to route fiber, if I were to do it, and I don't know how PacketWorks would do it, but they would come up Mississauga Road, up King Street, up to 50, and then up to Ballycroy. So that puts fiber on the good perimeter of the town, which allows other internet service providers to jump off of that, whether they're using some sort of wireless service or they want to extend fiber further. And then couple this with the SWIFT project. This would relieve or reduce the obligation of SWIFT to cover that routing, which allows funding to be used for other areas of the town.
So I'm going to hold you to this. Basically, it means that once this is done, it allows SWIFT to advance their agendas to move further into Caledon to cover other areas, getting this first initiative done.
I can't speak specifically to the plan that SWIFT has because they're still formulating the design. But in essence, wherever this fiber is built, this backbone fiber is built, SWIFT would not have to build it. So it would accelerate the process.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. Councillor DeBoer.
So they're going to be the main lines?
That's
is
right.
That essentially what it is? Was Ballycroy one of the selected because my understanding is Rogers is already across Ballycroy with fiber because they service the Palgrave Park, and Bell came up from the south with fiber.
So Bell, Bell, I can't speak to Rogers' infrastructure, so Rogers and Bell and Hydro One, they don't share their fiber routes with the public or with the town. It is quite possible that parts of Palgrave, I know parts of Palgrave are supported through high-speed services, and then just south of that, there is no service. So, and yes, Bell did run fiber up to the equestrian park, but that fiber has not been used for any residential or business services other than that park. They have a tower there, and that is all what's called backhaul. So that's the same type of fiber that this program would support. Difference is that this particular fiber run would be used for commercial residential purposes.
Okay, so then where'd this company show up? Backbone Fiber?
PacketWorks or Backbone?
Well, PacketWorks, I guess, is the corporation. Where did they show up from?
So we were reaching out to internet service providers. We reached out to Bell Rogers, Hydro One Networks to see if there was interest in partnering with those larger firms to submit an application. Some smaller internet service providers came forward as well, and PacketWorks was one of them, and they were the company that was interested in submitting an application.
Okay, so it's the levy that we're collecting here that's going to this?
No, the levy is for SWIFT.
Okay.
This funding is a separate funding program. 75%, up to 75% would be allocated by the federal government, and the remaining 25, depending on the ratio, would come from that internet service provider.
So 75% comes from the federal government. Impactel will be will provide the next 25%.
That's right.
So, okay. So where, as far as Caledon, where was our participation other than trying to put the pieces together? And
sure.
Then how secure is this federal money?
So this is us supporting PacketWorks in their application process. So there is no, it's not definitive, it's not final. So there is a chance that the application doesn't get submitted or the application doesn't get accepted. There are still hurdles to cross. Part of the requirement was that the town, in terms of the partnership, that there's an anchor institution noted in the application. So in order for the funding process to even move forward, we would have to identify some support for the process.
So we would be the, it's actually PACTEL that wants to head down this road.
That's right.
They approached us to be a partner because the federal government wants to know that they're investing in something that there is a community benefit to.
That's correct.
And our input was, is let's look at locations where we think we're underserviced, but yet we can start to develop a network out of.
Actually, the locations were identified by the federal government as part of this overall process. So in terms of where we think we would put an anchor institution, in any four of those locations or along the way, where there's a viable location, it could be considered. In the report, I mentioned that perhaps the community center in Bell Fountain would be a logical first anchor institution.
Okay, and it would be interesting to know the back reasoning between selecting all these locations, because there are even, other than Bell Fountain, they're even more historical as far as villages. Campbell's Cross at least has a few houses. Sandhill is getting less before it's going to get more. And Ballycroy is a nice little village off the side of the highway. So yeah. I don't know how they would have come to these little locations.
Yeah, I can't speak to the specifics of their selection process. I know that they as far as their documentation illustrates, they've spoke to private, public sector, not-for-profits, a whole gamut of the consumer population, and through that process they determined which communities would be identified.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Councillor DeBoer. Councillor Downey.
Thank you. Through you, Chair Mazzapelli. I just have a question about infrastructure crossover, noticing that all of the locations are on regional roads. So how does that relationship work?
Through the Chair, I'm not aware of any consideration in terms of regional roads or how the intersections were identified. Again, that was
no. I understand. Yeah. I'm not speaking in terms of identification. I just mean in when it gets down to construction, they're all regional roads. So, are we like, does how does this cross over with them and their works and what's happening?
Certainly. So there is a process for internet service providers or the town or whoever wants to run fiber for accessing. So this will answer the delegate's questions. But fiber can be run either on hydro poles, it can be put into the ground through conduit. So whatever the process is that the internet service provider chooses, they would go through the application process, be it through the region or through the town, to acquire access, and it ultimately ends up with hydro and the hydro poles at some point. So there is a process that they'd have to go through.
So then my second question would be, what if it becomes a more difficult process with the region than it would be if they were just dealing with us and they were on town roads?
So they would likely be using aerial, so they would likely be using hydro poles. The majority of fiber is run across hydro poles, and the municipalities, either the second tier or lower tier, does not have, or upper tier, does not have jurisdiction over that. It's hydro that grants access to their poles or doesn't.
Okay, yeah. Good. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Downey. Mayor Thompson.
Councillor Downey has a really good question, and I do know the Region of Peel would prefer the fiber put in the ground with conduit, and I know they're very cooperative on that. So one is we definitely need their cooperation, but I know they're a willing partner on this. The challenge we do have is Hydro One is my biggest fear. That could be the slowdown. But having said that, these different centers that we're talking is something like a booster station on our water systems, or you know how you have hydro wires go a certain thing and then they have a little booster center. This is basically is why they're picking these communities as boosters, but it allows us to constantly connect. And it's about building interconnections and filling in, is building the spine and filling it in. But going forward, it's going to be the pocket works. There's a lot of small companies that are doing this across Canada, not just Ontario, that can do this. They can do this roughly about 25% to 30% of what it would cost Bell and Rogers, because they're so top heavy with everything else they've got going. So this is why you're going to see pocket works. There's many other different companies out there that are all doing this across not just Ontario but Canada for this. And all I'm saying is let's hope we can get some funding for it. I know it's not very much when you have to spread it across the country. It's whoever can come forward with a plan. So I'm grateful that we have a provider that wants to sees value in Caledon and wants to invest. So To me, that's a good start.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. Councillor McClure.
Is there any way of transporting power through telephone lines or hydro lines? Do they have to have their own special wires?
I'm sure, so through the chair, I'm sure there are technologies out there that allow you to travel or for data to travel through hydro lines. That is not a chosen or a ideal medium.
Now, somebody told me one time you could string it right through the hydro wire.
Yeah. There's a lot of interference in hydro. A lot of electronics would have to go into cleaning that signal, so I don't know if it would be a viable option for us. If it was viable, I'm pretty sure that industry would have done it by now.
They would have thought of it, yeah. So,
and in terms of the...
They need their own special wire. What thickness of wire is it? What is it?
That's the fiber? It's actually glass.
What is it?
It's glass. Sand.
Yeah. Goodness. Okay.
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Councillor McClure. Councillor Downey?
Through you. We're all chuckling because we all got new iPhones this morning and nobody can figure them out. So we're obviously not the most tech-savvy bunch. So my question is, do we have the opportunity through this process to speak to our school board partners, especially along King Road? I know in Campbell's Cross, we have a school that holds almost 1,000 students. In Bellefontaine, I know you said the community center would be a logical place to have a hub, but the school's only a couple blocks away as well. So I think if there's an opportunity there for partnerships with the elementary schools, I'm sure that the PO board would appreciate it.
Yep, we can do that.
Thank you.
There are no other requesters. I just have a couple for myself. And I just wanted to confirm with the clerk that we have answered the questions that we have. Okay. So the first question I have is Ballycry?
Yep.
The community? Ballycory?
Yep.
It's in Dufferin Township.
That's right. What is it?
Simcoe County, sorry. Has a request been made from that government to also support as that community is in their jurisdiction? I'm just curious if we know that.
I don't think that would have been part of the process. So if we look at the way the fiber would be run, it would be run through Caledon. So there would not be, as far as this build is concerned, nothing going north.
Right, but the benefit would be to that community, which is outside of our boundary.
There's nobody there.
I thought that there was a community there that would actually be benefiting.
So specifically, I can't speak to if Packet Works has reached out to I'm not even sure where Ballycroy is and what community it's in, but to the regional government, I'm not aware of that.
Okay, so we don't need to necessarily look at the end point. It's the path,
right,
getting there and the
benefit
is realized all along there. Okay. Then that negates all my other questions. Perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So this was moved by Mayor Thompson and seconded by Councillor Downey. All in favor? Any opposed? The motion carries. Thank you. Next is staff report 2017-47 regarding Kennedy Road rehabilitation from Old Base Line to King Street. That contract number 2017-29 be awarded to Graham Brothers Construction Limited in the amount of $2,123,215.19, inclusive of non-recoverable HST, funded from Capital Project 16-115, Kennedy Road Rehabilitation, and that the mayor and clerk be authorized to execute a contract with Graham Brothers Construction Limited for the completion of this work. Need a mover and a seconder? Moved by Councillor Downey, seconded by Councillor DeBoer. This was held by Councillor Shaughnessy.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Question. Let me just go to this. I think it's the second page. It was the pricing. Normally, when I used to do tenders, you throw out the bottom and you throw out the top, and then you find the ones in the middle. But I found very interesting that the difference between the bottom and the top was like $1 million. And that makes me suspect is either somebody didn't include something or somebody overbuilt something. I know you're picking the lowest number, but I'm going, what are these guys for $3 million doing that the other guys for $2 million aren't doing? So I just think that's a large difference in numbers and costing. So I'd love to know. Thank you.
Go ahead. We've got a response for you, Ms. Councillor Shaughnessy.
Through you, Chair Masipelli, to Councillor Shaughnessy. With our new e-bidding process, bidders must complete every single line item. So the benefit is that no one's missing something, there's no additional parts, and it ensures that we're looking at real numbers. It's not like someone forgot to add something or delete something. We also have minimum requirements in terms of experience and past experience and vendor performance and such. So it's not necessarily that we award just on the lowest price. There's mandatory requirements and previous experience they must meet. We also have a consultant that we use that helped develop the specifications for the road construction. That consultant also reviews the response and makes sure that it meets the town's requirements over and above just low price.
Okay, so then why do you think we have $1 million difference? I'm just curious. I come from the construction industry, and I just find that an unusual number.
The four low bidders own the asphalt plants?
That's the answer I wanted.
You good, Councillor Shaughnessy?
I'm good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Councillor Groves.
Thank you. Through you. To staff, that was one of my, I think you answered the question about lowest bid, that we don't always go with the lowest bid.
Through you, Chair Masipelli, to Councillor Groves, that is correct. It has to be the lowest compliant bid. So there's a compliance check that's done to make sure that they have the necessary experience, equipment, whatever we set forth in the tender document, they must meet those requirements, and then they're considered for price.
Okay, so let me ask you this, and just from a public perception, because some of the things I hear all the time, and whether it be us tendering and whoever is getting the jobs and or at the Region Appeal, it always seems like it's the same contractors getting these jobs. So the perception out there, and you know, there's a whole bunch of things going on right now about procurement and all that stuff. There's something going on in Niagara region right now, and it's happened in Brampton, and it's all over the place. It's in Vaughan, it's everywhere. The public perception is that, oh, geez, you know, we can bid a job, and every time the job gets awarded, the job is being awarded to sort of the same contractor. So, I don't know. So I guess I have some difficulties with that because, and again, it's not just here, but it's even contractors that are bidding at the region, and that's the public's perception, is that the same contractors are getting these jobs. So is there anything that you can...
Mr. Valentino?
So, Chair Masipelli, to Councillor Groves and actually all of Council, in purchasing, I run a very tight ship. And I can guarantee Council that there's nothing that's outside of our purchasing bylaw in terms of the way we conduct our procurement processes. Again, with the e-bidding process, everyone bids online. 1 minute after closing, those numbers are published to the public, and they can see exactly who bid what. There's no tampering. There's no reviewing numbers. The system is fully backed up, and it's secure. There's three people that sign off once the bid is closed and they all viewed the same numbers. There's a number of safeguards in place to make sure that we're awarding in accordance to the purchasing bylaw. In terms of the response of it's always the same contractors, new contractors always look at risk. And if they haven't done business with the town, maybe they're not as comfortable. Maybe they are not doing any work in the general area, which makes it more expensive for mobilization and demobilization. And some contractors actually live in the town of Caledon, and they take pride. And those are the comments that I get, is we take pride in the community we're in. I want to see my trucks. I want to see my signs on the road because this is my community. And you'll find that with contractors that are local, that they sharpen their pencils for a number of reasons.
And I totally support having our local contractors and keeping them busy because they certainly support our community. I did have a concern because I know under the previous director of Public Works there were some challenges and there were some issues with a particular contractor, and this contractor has been awarded. And at the time it was, the discussion was that this particular contractor, there were some challenges there and that they weren't going to be allowed to bid on jobs here. And I see that this contractor is bidding on jobs and he's being awarded those jobs. So is there any...
Mr. Valentino?
Through your chair, Ms. Appelli. We do have a vendor performance procedure that we follow. And there's documented incident reports that we complete. And as of 2017, purchasing now meets with the project manager for each project three times. At the beginning of the project and is there with the contractor as a kickoff meeting. Halfway through the contract, we determine if the contract is going according to schedule and if there are any vendor performance issues. And then again, at the end of the contract, we sit down with the project managers to ensure, was it done to our satisfaction? Was it complete? Was it on budget? There's a number of questions that we ask. As far as previous directors and their comments, they may have not made it to purchasing and they may not have made it to us for comment. So I can't comment on previous discussions if they weren't brought forward to purchasing.
Just raises a concern for me when I see those contractors being awarded contracts when there's been challenges with a particular contractor. And so when we write these contracts, do we have, I guess we must have something written in the contract or the specifications or the procurement or the tender that should they not fulfill, or whether it's being on time, whether it's, because I've had residents who's had some contractors and they're quite rude. People have concerns, people express those concerns, and the contractors are really rude. So do we write some of those things, performance and those sorts of things in their contract that we have an out clause somewhere in there, even prior to the job being complete?
Mr. Valentino.
So through you, Chairman Zappelli, yes, our contracts do follow standard construction documents, so there are special provisions that we follow. In addition to that, again, starting January 1st of this year, we started a vendor code of conduct. So on our town website, there's a vendor code of conduct, which is also included in the contract documents, that goes beyond, I guess, what you're explaining, just work. It's in terms of the way they conduct themselves as contractors on behalf of the town, and it goes into great detail. So the vendor code of conduct is actually also embedded in the contract, that they not only have to follow their contractual work, but the vendor code of conduct as well, and they acknowledge that with the signed agreement.
Okay, so let me ask you finally, because I have a resident who's going through some difficulties right now with a particular contractor that did some work on his street. And do we do pre-inspection of homes? Is it in the contract? Is it up to us to write it in the tender? Is it up to the contractors to do that where they do pre-inspection? So if they're going to be doing some work on a street and they're going to be using heavy equipment and they're going to use vibratory rollers and tampers and whatever else they're using, and that it causes vibration, and some of these homes in some of these areas are older homes and may start experiencing cracks in foundation or wherever else, and then they end up in a big battle because then the town will say, well, it's not our responsibility, it's a contractor's responsibility, then the contractors, they pass the buck. And so is there anything that protects the homeowners when we issue these tenders and they go in with these types of equipment, vibratory equipment?
Mr. Gordecki.
Through you, Chair Mezzapelli, to Councillor Groves. It depends on the nature of the work that's being done. With a typical paving contract, typically if the consultant or our staff don't recommend it, we're not going to be doing sort of foundation inspections because that does get quite costly depending on the work, and obviously we have our engineering opinions as well. If it's a larger project and we are concerned about excavating near a foundation and depending on the age of the houses, then we would. But okay. It all depends on the job.
Okay. So you would take all those things into consideration when you're tendering?
That's correct. If we're concerned, we'll be doing those inspections.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor DeBoer.
Thanks. A question to Ryan. I'm glad to see that there's going to have the paved shoulders and crossroad culverts and entrance culverts all being replaced. You're going to ensure that they don't run into the hiccups that I watched as far as culverts getting missed and not getting replaced and those sort of things, right?
Mr. Kredecky.
Through you, Chair Mezzapelli, to Councillor DeBoer. That's correct. Our staff will be going through the specifications that are noted for the contractor and making sure that they're diligently following those. And with any job, obviously, there's going to be some sort of reconciliation to smaller items at the end of the contract. So certain contractors are better at getting to those, but we'll make sure that we're following all of our tools that we have in our toolbox to get it done.
Okay, and as far as a consultant and essentially staff representative, or how is the town represented with the contractor? Are we going to have somebody internal, or are we going external?
Through you, Chair Mezzapelli, to Councillor DeBoer, we have a project manager assigned to the roads program, and we also have a consulting engineer that will be doing the contract administration from the liability sort of contract end as well.
So we're actually got a project manager here that's going to oversee the consultant on the fee in the field.
The consultant is overseeing the actual contractor in terms of their work, but we do have a project manager that is another sort of level of overseeing that project.
Okay, thanks.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Kredecky. No other questions? All in favor? None opposed? Carried. The balance of the staff reports were approved upon consent, as were the recommendations of the advisory committees. The next item on the agenda are notices of motion. First notice of motion that was held. Revenues and bookings management for the Palgrave Community Facility. This was moved by Councillor Shaughnessy. Whereas the taxpayers of the town of Caledon constructed the Palgrave Community Facility for a cost of $1,898,479 using a combination of development charges and the proceeds of the sale of the Palgrave Community Center. And whereas this facility was to provide an expansion of auxiliary building one for the Toronto 2015 Pan Am Games, bracket Caledon Equestrian Park, and whereas the town in CS 2013-081 has indicated that this facility will provide a new meeting space for seniors, youth of Palgrave, as well as members of the Loyal Orange Lodge, Palgrave Branch 288. And whereas we are aware that the Palgrave Rotary Club cannot meet in Palgrave due to blanket booking by EMG, therefore be it resolved that a thorough review of the booking management revenues and related expenses for the facility be undertaken by staff and report back to Council by June 6, 2017, and that the staff report include recommendations that support community use of the facility and confirmation that when the facility is not made available to the community because of Caledon Equestrian Park needs, full rental payments are received from the tenant, bracket EMG. This was held by Councillor Shaughnessy. Oh, sorry, we need a seconder for the motion to discuss it. Councillor Gross. This was held by Councillor Shaughnessy.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Yeah, this is a facility. When I did the history and listened to and read about our councillor, Mr. Whitehead, on how this was a facility to be built as a Palgrave community facility for the residents, it was also looked at by Mr. Seguin from the town of Caledon as being an opportunity during the Pan Am Games that it could be partially used to facilitate the Pan Am Games, which is all great. But from what I understand, from what I've garnered here out of material, is that it is fairly blanketed by EMG, and no offense to EMG. The 2015 is pretty well covered by EMG bookings, and then I got the 2016 calendars, and there's only the town bookings. It's not representative of the EMG bookings. So what I'd like to see is that staff put together, you know, what we're making on the building, what we're not making on the building, how well it's performing, and what else we could do to make it more successful, as this was supposed to be Well, the DC charges came from the new built in the vicinity. And I think we look at a lot of our other buildings, but I don't think I've seen anything on this building come before me as a counselor to let us know how it's doing. And if the EMG is using it a fair amount, that it's almost become a building that's primarily for them. And it seems to be from May to October that seems to be what it is. That, I just hope we're making some good money off of it. So I don't know if anybody has any other questions having to do with this facility, but I was, I didn't bring it forward on my own. I had been questioned numerous times by people, and that's why I brought it forward to get the analysis done and to actually look at how we facilitate the community using it even more. Because I think if the community had thought that it was going to be primarily just EMGs, I don't think that fits the bill of a community center. So I'm open to hear other comments from everybody else. It's really just the financial and to look at how it's being booked and how can we do it better.
Thank you, Councillor Shaughnessy. Councillor DeBoer.
I guess with this facility in my area, I've been able to keep on top of it, as when Richard and I both pushed to have it added to it when we found out the Orange Hall was actually sold. So we looked to find a solution, and this was the best option. I think in conversations with staff, I'm going to ask that if staff can comment on the finance reporting and the intent to actually bring something to council in the near future. So I think there is an intent from staff. So I think if you want to find out what the timing of that was going to be as a starting point.
Mr. Wong, are you able to address the question?
Sure. Through you, Councillor Mezzapelli, on this one and I guess the next notice motion, our intent was to bring a report to committee in May. We recently received financials from our partner, and we're just doing some review before we write a report.
Councillor DeBoer.
Okay. So right there, we're looking at having something come back to council on that. I think the other question is with regards to the booking procedure. And I know over the course of the last year and a half or better, we've been working with community groups as well as EMG and staff. They've been working to try and come up with a program that works, knowing that this was an added-on facility from the original agreement. So I think if we had a moment of staff to comment on what they've been working through over the course of this last probably year on the booking procedures and how how far we've come and the fact that we have come quite a distance from the last year for sure, and how the year looks going forward.
Mr. Wong? Oh, sorry, Ms. Tillett.
Through Chair Mezzapelli to Councillor DeBoer. So with that area in particular on Palgrave Scouts actually use it every Monday night for their meetings. The 4-H Club actually uses it on Tuesdays. They're using it for all of 2017 and 2018. They use it for programs that they run through there, through the kitchen as well. The EMG actually only has it for the 18 days that they are a part of the agreement, but the town uses the Palgrave Community Center for any other days available, and then usually Monday and Tuesdays are usually days available for us to use at any time. So we have been working very closely with EMG to kind of look at support services works with EMG to kind of book in times. There's no blanket times. There's just stuff that's booked in advance, so no different than I book the CSCC every year for certain times and events. I have that pre-booked in there. But, again, we work very closely with them to kind of open up as many avenues as we can, and we will also continue on in the future.
Yeah, and I think that one of the other events that's kind of been a showcase for agriculture within our area that they've supported is the Farm and Food Alliance, I believe it is, through the Headwaters. And they've hosted a couple of events there for that, including, as we heard from Mr. Firth, the Palgrave Rotary's Wines of the World, which is their major fundraiser. So as far as to say that the community isn't having use of this facility, I think at first everybody thought it was going to be all town of Caledon. And the reality is the legacy on this facility is for the equine industry. And I can speak that from my area and the number of riders and the number of horse individuals and the businesses that I have now since this facility has opened has increased. I've got a number of people that have riding stables that show it there every weekend, and I know for a fact because I watch his truck hauling horses up the road to the park. So I don't really think that I think staff are heading in a direction to do exactly what the resolution says, and I think that you're going to find that there's even more information coming forward. So I really don't think that it's necessary to have this resolution. I think we let staff do the work, and we'll have a report here from staff in probably, I think I gathered, about a month's time. That we're going to find from staff the results, and we continue to let them do the good work working with EMG to make this facility what we always thought, and that was going to be a showcase within the equine industry within Eastern Canada.
Thank you, Councillor DeBoer. There's no other speakers on the board. Oh, Councillor Shaughnessy.
You didn't really think that was the last of me, did you? Anyways, this is just an accounting, and this is just to make it formal for all the residents in Caledon. I know it's in Palgrave, but this is not just a Palgrave issue. It's $2 million worth of Town of Caledon money and $12 million of taxpayers' money to build it. But let's divide the two issues. This one is strictly about the Palgrave community facility, not about the whole property. It's also interesting that this was the ability to build this was 2013, 2014, but the contract is 2011. So it falls outside of the scope of the original contract with EMG. So I want to be clear on that. And the fact is that I have the calendars, and they're completely full in 2015 and show nothing in 2016 of any bookings from EMG. So if EMG, and from what I understand, from May to October, and I'm an equestrian, so here I'm an equestrian questioning it, May to October, you have, you from Wednesday on, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the people here at the Town of Caledon can't book anything. They have to confirm with EMG. So that was my reference to blanket booking. If you do it in other times of the year, you could get it maybe on a Thursday, Friday, Saturday. The trouble with the Palgrave Rotary, why they couldn't use it, was they couldn't consistently get every Wednesday for 12 months of the year. They could only get that in off times. Now, they're happy up at the other place, and I'm glad they're happy up at the other place, but it just points out that we have to do our due diligence. This is not picking on EMG. This is about doing our financial due diligence for all the residents in Caledon. And the bottom part says this report should include recommendations that support community use of the facility and confirmation that when the facility is not made available to the community because of Caledon Equestrian Park needs, full rental payments are being received. That's due diligence from a financial position. So this motion wasn't meant to offend anybody. It's meant to just do what the people of Caledon expect us to do financially. So that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Shaughnessy. Councillor Downey.
Thank you, through you, Chair. I guess just a clarification, because I'm pretty sure I heard Ms. Tollett mention that the financials were coming forward in May, it was Mr. Wong, that the financials are coming forward in May. So I'm wondering, maybe to Mr. Galloway, is there a way that council can be privy to some sort of listing in terms of when certain reports are coming forward? I think in the last month we've had two motions on the floor that were basically redundant because they were requesting work that staff was already doing, and it was on the roster coming forward. So maybe if there's a way that we knew that that was coming, then we could avoid.
Mr. Galloway?
Yes, avoid having to ask for it ahead of time.
Yes, through you, Mr. Chairman, to Councillor Downey. We senior management looks at many months in advance, and we have a worksheet that we work with. I can always provide that to Council if that's helpful. We usually are planning 3 to 4 months out on a regular basis with the various reports that we're staff is working on. As you know, staff reports are not written overnight. They take a lot of them, especially some of that were presented this evening or this afternoon, were fairly detailed and probably took 2 or 3 months to write, such as the the broadband report that we received because of the technical and detailed information. And there's much more even behind the scenes that goes on with the broadband issue. But I can always provide that to council if council so chooses. I can't tell you that it's a comprehensive list because as issues come up day to day, we may add to the list. But I can tell you we have approximately a 3 to 4 month list of items that staff is working on. So that can always be provided to council.
Thank you.
Mr. Galloway.
My second question is in regards to there's a lot of requests within this resolution for certain numbers. So I guess my question to Mr. Wong in terms of the financials coming forward is whether or not your report would include operating costs.
Mr. Wong?
Through Chair Mazzapelli, I'd just like to get some clarification. I'm not quite sure. Operating costs for the Palgrave Community Center or operating costs for the Calhoun Equestrian Park overall?
Both.
Okay, so just to clarify, my comments earlier was related to the Calhoun Equestrian Park. We have the agreement with the three partners, so the town, TRCA, and EMG, with respect to the original funding of the construction of the facility and then ongoing operations. So we had closed our first full year of operations in 2016, and I have been working on obtaining the financial statements and presenting and a report to present that to council. With respect to whether that report can include some of the points that are listed here in terms of financials for the Palgrave Community Center, I can certainly add that to the report.
Okay, thank you. So just to clarify again, this is work that's already being done. And you said May?
Mr. Wong?
Thank you.
Yeah. Councillor DeBoer.
I think another issue with the resolution is the final paragraph, and that is that that there's a recommendation and are giving direction to staff to come up with a conclusion, and that's collecting full payment. I think there's an agreement in place, if I'm not mistaken, as to how the facility is going to operate or how these things are dealt with. And it really isn't appropriate for this resolution to be giving full direction to staff to come to a conclusion. I think the staff report should look at how the entire operation is running and come up with the recommendations as to how it happened, how it should go, or how they intend to have it operate going forward, and leaving it to full staff rather than leaving it to staff to operate and come up with a decision as opposed to directing them to come to a conclusion.
Thank you. Councillor Shaughnessy.
Well, I think it's wonderful, but there's two motions on the floor. One is strictly about the facility that came after the contract, and I'd really like our lawyer to go through that contract. I remember mentioning it about 3 months ago that we should go through it, because I don't believe this building is covered in the contract. Now, I am a layman, but I don't believe it is, because it was built 2 years after the fact. I would hope it isn't included in the contract, quite frankly, because it was supposed to be the community center for the people, not an extra building for Calhoun Equestrian Park, even though I think it's wonderful that they have the opportunity to use it. So if some work is underway, it was to be the whole property. I'm now asking it to let's look at the community center and get the information, and let's look at Equestrian Park and get that information. And let's actually see what we've got. Because quite frankly, guys, if we look at the other motion says that we were owed this information in 2012, 13, 14, 15, and 16. And the article in the paper this morning says that it creates doubt whether that has all been done. And I don't know. All I'm saying is that motions are easy to follow. They're a reference point for the counselor who brings them forward and a reference point for the community to understand that somebody's actually doing something. And so far, for 2.5 years, I've been here, and I've not seen anything. I was told something in 2017 would come forward. So May was the first time I've heard about this, and this motion actually went into the agenda on Thursday. If somebody, why didn't somebody come to me and say, Barb, we're actually going to bring it to council in May? I would have changed, been happy to have the dates changed, but nobody. I mean, so as a counselor, what am I supposed to do? I'm not a mind reader. But this, I think this motion needs to stand, and we need to be able to follow it. And you know what? When staff need to look at these motions when they come forward, and if they wanted to critique them, I am more than open to having my motions critiqued and make them even that much better. So, no, I think the people, both of Palgrave and of Caledon, deserve to know how everything is performing. So I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Groves.
Thank you. I don't have any problems in supporting the motion. I seconded the motion, and I think to Councillor Shaughnessy's point, when we are spending people's money, I think that it is incumbent upon us to make sure that the public understands. If the public has concerns, we need to make sure that it is available to the public to satisfy their concerns. We know what's going on here. Some of us know what's going on, but the public doesn't. So I always believe in being accountable to the public when we are spending their money. This issue has been a bone of contention, if you will. When we first looked at this issue and we were looking at having the equestrian park and doing all that work to it, the public raised a number of concerns. There is nothing wrong with giving the people what it is that they're asking for. And if this is an accounting that we're looking for, then I think that we should be providing it to the public. We have a for-profit group in there, which I'm sure they're making quite a bit of a hefty profit. I don't know, because I'm not privy to any of that information either. But I think that I don't see anything wrong with the motion, and I think to Councillor Shaughnessy's point, in all fairness, her motion was in the package on Thursday. If staff was looking at coming forward with something in May, they really should have contacted Councillor Shaughnessy. I'm sure she would have changed her motion or somehow reworked the wording in it and to make sure that it jives with what staff is doing. So I don't know. I guess something's broken somewhere. And I'm not sure how you fix it, but I would suggest that we, through the CAO, that looks at how we can fix these problems and so that they don't become a problem when they come to the table, but that they're addressed prior to coming here. So I'm just going to leave it there. And again, spending public dollars, it is our responsibility to make sure that there's good accounting and that it's accessible to the public. I don't know what the contract says with EMG, but I remember when we were looking at it previously, they had quite a nice deal with the town where they were renting the facility for a buck. So I don't know what's in the contract now. I haven't got a clue. But that was a real concern for the people.
Thank you, Councillor Groves. Mr. Gorder.
So through the chair to members of council, I do want to assure you that I did mention to Councillor Shaughnessy that, in fact, there was a report coming to council in regard to the North motion. I just sent you a copy of the email. So. That being said, yes, it didn't have any dates, but I was clear that there was a report coming.
Councillor
Shaughnessy, we're going to go through the order. Just you're not on the board right now.
Okay, but I wanted to clarify. I think I had a right to clarify because it sounded like I knew it was coming forward, and that was 2017. I knew nothing about May. I just want it to be on the record.
Councillor Downey.
Thank you. Through you, I guess I was just looking for some clarification from the CAO because it's a little bit distressing to hear some of the comments that I'm hearing from my colleagues. I would argue that as a member of council representing your constituents, it is your job to find the information and communicate that with your residents. And I would also say that the staff in this building are open and available to residents and council at all times. That's their job, is to provide that information when asked.
I would also say that as members of council, any motion we put forward is our language. It's what we're representing. It is not the role of staff to critique it or change it in any way unless they are asked for that sounding board. If you're working with them on an issue, that's one thing, but it is not their job to come back to us and tell us and to give us advice on our motions. There are motions. So I think, you know, as members of council, if you're looking for clarification, it's up to you to go and get it, not for staff to come to you with that.
Thank you, Councillor Downey. Councillor DeBoer.
Yeah, I just had to make one comment with regards to the comment about the dollar a year and the good deal that they enjoyed from the town of Caledon. The history on the park is that it's lands that were always owned by TRCA. The TRCA at the time of the first agreement, when it started out with the Albion Pony Club, when they moved up from Albion Bolton Fairgrounds, was to the TRCA allowed them and wanted an agreement in place. TRCA at that time were not in the business and were really not experienced enough to deal with other businesses in renting of their property. So they weren't looking for a revenue stream from the property, and the agreement was that the town would administer the arrangement between EMG and TRCA, and we'd be kind of the middle person to handle the contract, because at that time we had the legal staff involved, or we had the legal people here, plus we could keep track of the site. The fact that the town should even, or anybody, should expect that the town should have gotten more from it is kind of ludicrous, because we never owned the land. The land, we were just a group in between, because we had the facility to deal with it here. The land was owned by TRCA, Toronto Region Conservation. It has been and still is. So that was where the agreement came from, and that was where because the TRCA, it's, and we can ask our lawyers, but the idea of a dollar a year or $2 a year is a nominal sum that's used in these kind of agreements to allow for the use of these properties as part of an agreement. And that is the history of it. The town just administered the agreement. It was TRCA, and at that time, TRCA wasn't looking for a revenue stream off of that site. They were actually helping an organization that started out as a very small pony club, which happened to grow into what we see today.
Thank you, Councillor DeBoer. Councillor Groves.
Thank you, Councillor DeBoer, for the clarification. And I know TRCA owned the property, but somewhere along the line, we put some public dollars into that property, and I think that was the concern from the residents, is that we're investing now public dollars into that property, and so we've got to be accountable in terms of how what the return is on our investment. I mean, I can tell you the Edelweiss Park is also owned by TRCA, and the Bolton Wanderers play there, and we charge them a fee for booking that facility, and it's not cheap. We have a stewardship agreement with them, and they pay quite a bit of money to use that park. So I guess I see nothing wrong with the motion. It's just asking for accountability in terms of sort of what the revenues are that's coming in, and how the community gets to use this facility, because we do have public dollars invested. With respect to Councillor Downey's comments about motions and staff looking at these motions, yeah, it happens all the time. I have motions that I put forward, and I get staff changing my motions or making suggestions to change the motion. Absolutely nothing wrong with that, Councillor Downey. And if there's another member of council, I have the floor, Councillor Downey. You can get back on the board should you wish to do so. If a member of council is bringing a motion forward and staff has some comments, there's absolutely nothing wrong with staff getting a hold of the councillor, saying, look it, we're bringing this forward, we have some concerns with your motion, you know, we can, how about we change this or make a few suggestions, so that when it does come forward, we don't have these types of surprises, I guess. We do it at the region. I go to the clerk at the region if I'm drafting a motion. I go to the planning department. I ask them to help me with my motions because I want to make sure that those motions are done properly. So nobody is questioning staff. We're just simply saying, and it isn't foreign, it happens all the time in all the years I've been here, where we send in our motions, we put the motions, and we change them, and we work with staff. We work with staff to make sure that those motions are coming forward, that they are supportable. And sometimes, you know what, they're not. And sometimes we don't want to change them, but at least give the opportunity.
Okay, Councillor Downey's on the board next. I just wanted to interject. I just want to, I guess, to all of council, we got to be careful of the words we use at this table, and because we are venturing into the area of whether we agree or not, but you know, questioning staff's work in involving us in doing things such as motions. So I would just ask all of council, please be cognizant of what we're discussing here. We want to make sure that we are doing the work that we need to do, but we need to be professional and courteous and respectful. And I just ask that all of us consider that as we discuss here today. Councillor Downey.
Thank you. Through you, Chair Mezzapelli, I would echo Councillor Groves' sentiments. She actually underlined my point quite well, in that oftentimes we do work with staff to craft motions and work together to reach our goals together. I guess my point was in regards to Councillor Shaughnessy's comments about staff not coming to her after the motion had been drafted, and that was my point in that I don't think it's staff's responsibility or role to search through the agendas, check the motions, and then come to council. Those are things that, as you said, Councillor Groves, happen before when we're working through them. So that I agree.
Councillor Groves.
I'm sorry, but the CFO clearly had a report coming in May. I think that it would have been a good thing. It would have been better had the CFO contacted Councillor Shaughnessy, whether it's a CFO or the clerk, to say, look it, we're working on
Councillor
this.
Groves, I'm sorry.
Councillor Mezzapelli. No.
I'm going to interject as the chair.
I've got the floor.
I'm going to interject as the chair.
Well, I'm going to challenge the chair, and I've got the floor.
Then you can challenge the chair. First of all, we're not speaking to the subject of the motion that's before us. We are getting off track and we're getting into minutia. We are also getting into the area where we're challenging and questioning staff, and I don't think that that's fair.
Councillor Mezzapelli, the date was raised. No, I'm talking to the motion. The motion's talking about June.
As chair,
and the staff talk
Councillor
about
Groves, as
May.
As chair, I have the responsibility to conduct these proceedings. And when I feel that we are getting out of line, it is my duty to bring it in, and I am doing so. I'm not stopping you from speaking. I am addressing a particular aspect where we are getting to the area where we are challenging and questioning staff, and I don't feel that's appropriate at this table.
I am not challenging staff, Councillor Mezzapelli, through you, and I am simply saying if a report is coming forward in May and this motion is asking for something in June, then it should have been said to the mover that there is a report being prepared and it is coming forward in May. I'm
With
not challenging
respect,
staff.
Gross,
I am putting that on record.
You are questioning staff's judgment. You
no,
are questioning staff judgment.
I totally disagree with you.
Okay.
I totally disagree with
point
you.
Point of privilege. When we start questioning everybody's integrity, excuse me, Chair Mezzapelli, I just forgot his name for a second. Nobody's questioning staff's integrity. But what you are asking for is questioning. It's not integrity. It's questioning. And that is totally allowed under the procedural bylaw, under the Municipal Act, and under the Code of Conduct. You are allowed to question, and that's all that was. And now everybody, if anybody should have called a point a privilege, it should have been when Councillor Downey started to insult me. And I left it alone, and I didn't respond. So maybe we can get back to the order of business, and let's just vote on the motion. So I'll call the question.
probably can't do that in committee, but I'll kind of call the question anyways.
There are no other speakers on the board, so we're going to call the question. All those in favor of the motion? I don't believe you can in committee. Those opposed? The motion fails. The next motion on the agenda is revenue sharing of Palgrave Equestrian Facility. This was moved and held by Councillor Shaughnessy. Seconder? Councillor Groves. Whereas the taxpayers of the Town of Caledon and the Province of Ontario have funded major site and building changes on the Palgrave Equestrian Facility in preparation for the 2015 Pan Am Parapan Am Games, and whereas the Town of Caledon financed a portion of its contribution through a debenture with the goal that payments of this loan would be subsidized through revenue sharing as outlined in CAO 2011-007, and whereas the lease dated 15 November 2011, starting the 1st of January 2012, includes a revenue sharing agreement, Schedule E, that provides the formula for which the tenant will pay additional rent. And whereas the tenant shall submit this additional rent with a statement showing the amount of gross revenue and operating costs for the preceding rental year to the Town of Caledon within 60 days from year's end. Therefore, there should be submissions by the tenant for the years 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015, and 2016, and further 2016 represents a full year of operations under the lease, and that the tenant, EMG, specifically had until March 1st, 2017 to provide the Town of Caledon a revenue sharing accounting. Therefore, be it resolved that staff review the accounting, in particular the revenue cost breakdown as provided by EMG for all years, and that staff prepare a summation report to Council prior to June 6, 2017, that provides an overview on activities and financial benefits to the residents of Caledon, and that staff recommend either to accept the EMG statement of account or proceed to audit as provided for in the lease. This was held by Councillor Shaughnessy, and I am going to take a moment before we speak, and based on the previous conversation, I'm going to ask all of Council, and I don't care what your position is on the matter, that we speak respectfully and with courtesy and decorum. I will call and interject if we start getting sidetracked. Councillor Shaughnessy?
Who would have known that just asking for financials would get people so upset? It's called transparency and accountability, people. That's what we all get elected to do. Be transparent. Be accountable. You can't just say the words. You have to actually act the words. So now I have some questions. I'll ask of staff on the motion then. Because I'm querying whether staff actually has all the financials just because of what Mr. Craig Collins says in the newspaper, where he says he's provided some. So the reason it was 2012, and I know this very well, is to get a baseline prior to anything being built at the Caledon Equestrian Park. And then obviously 2015 was the year of the Pan Am Games, and now we've had 1 year since. So now I'm going to ask. I would have assumed somebody would have gotten back to me, but I'll ask, do we have the financial statements from EMG for the years 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015, and 2016 as required by our 2011 contract? Like Mr. Collins says, they've only given you part, and you said you've got some. So do we have those years?
Ms. Tollett, are you able? No. Sorry, Mr. Wong? Forgive me, Mr. Wong.
It's okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mentioned earlier we recently received the 2016 full year financials as it relates to the lease. The other years that are mentioned, I'll have to check whether or not they are required under the lease.
Okay. So, you know what? I've read the lease. Like I said, I'm not a legal person, but it said
60 days after the end of the year. And so, yeah, we were owed 2012 through 2016. And that's why I was worried as a counselor that I've not seen anything in 2 years that I've been here. So this came forward because a number of my residents, and they're all equestrians, or a lot of them are, and they were worried. They want to make sure Caledon's getting at least their fair share because it is a profit-sharing situation. So I'll leave, since the last one brought so much out and so much negativity out, I think I'll just allow you guys to sit back and speak to whether we actually want to bring out the financials to all the residents of Caledon in a timely fashion. Because quite frankly, I was told 2017 sometime. I wasn't told May. And yes, the clerk did provide me an email when I sent my motions in, just because that was on the 15th, that they were going to bring something forward. But it was never said what month or what year, just that they were working on it. So I want to be clear, because sometimes not only staff's integrity gets pulled into question, but counselor's integrity gets pulled into question. And sometimes people tell half the story and not the full story. And I just wanted everybody to be clear on what I had received. So I'll let everybody else speak to the motion. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor DeBoer.
Thank you. Once again, I think staff can comment on whether what's contained in the motion is exactly or along the lines of what they were going to bring forward here in the next month or so.
Mr. Wong.
And I say month or so because I can't remember the date. That you
Through you, Chair Mazzapelli, pretty much we were going to report on the what's listed in the motion in May.
Okay, thank you.
There are no other speakers. Councillor Shaughnessy.
Just want to clarify pretty much what's in the motion, but let's be straight here. There, we don't have the financials from 2012, 13, 14, or 15. You only have 2016. So what you'd be reporting on would be 2016, not 12, 13, 14, not the other years. So I just, you know what? Everybody else is really sticklers. So I'm now going to be a little stickler too about what we're actually going to get in May. Thank
Mr.
you.
Mr. Wong.
Through you, Chair Mazzapelli. What I mentioned earlier is I will have to check the agreement as to whether or not the 2012, 13, 14 are required. So if they're not, that will be covered off in my report also.
Okay, and I guess just following up on Councillor Shaughnessy's question, if it is required, it will be addressed in the report?
Yes, Mr. Chair, if they are required, then we will certainly follow up with our partner to make sure that we receive that and see if we can get that for the May reporting.
Okay. You still have the floor.
Thanks, Rob. So just to show you that the motion does speak to all the years, and it may be that you need to consult the contract and talk to our lovely lawyer over there, but it says prior to council June 6th. So they can, if they want to report back in May, I'm happy if it reports back in May, but it says prior to. Doesn't say it has to be on that date. It says prior to. Okay?
I just want to understand your last comment. Are you suggesting letting the report come to council as it is proposed, or are you still moving forward with the motion?
No, I'm moving forward with the motion because okay. They don't have the years that I believe the is required under the I've got the contract.
Right, except Mr. Wong just stated that whether it is or it isn't, it would be addressed in the report.
But he would have to get the 4 years of financials, and I don't think you're going to be able to get that quickly. I don't think. But I'm just saying it's still a motion, and there's nothing wrong. If they're going to do it, then let the motion go through, and it just requires – motions require staff to follow up because they are direction to staff. So if it requires some follow-up from staff and it's what they were going to do anyways, then there's no harm in letting the motion go through. It is a matter of record then. So I don't see what the harm is.
Thank you, Councillor Shaughnessy. I have no other speakers on the board, so we will vote on the motion. All those in favor? All those opposed? The motion failed. Next motion that was held by Councillor Shaughnessy, notices of motion. Where's the time? Sorry, need a seconder. Mayor Thompson? Whereas the time between Committee of the Whole and Council meetings is causing unnecessary delays in getting residents' concerns before Council, and whereas allowing notices of motion at both Committee and of the Whole meetings, at both Committee of the Whole meetings and Council meetings may reduce the number of motions without notice, bracket, walk-on motions, now therefore be it resolved that the procedural bylaw be amended to prevent notices of motions on the agenda for the Committee of the Whole meetings and Council meetings beginning in May 2017. This was held by Councillor Shaughnessy.
You're going to get tired of hearing me. Sorry. Okay. So this motion has everything to do with the fact that, in my experience as councillor, since we've changed, we had a system where we had every 2 weeks we had a council meeting, and something that was important to the residents could come forward every 2 weeks. We're now quite often it's every 5 weeks. And I've had to have a couple walk-on motions, which were actually denied by council, but they were walk-on motions because they became urgent because they couldn't wait 5 weeks for them to come forward. So we're already having these motions at committee. To have it at council the way it used to be, they still go in the agenda, they still get the public to be able to look at them and know that they're coming forward. So no further ado on that one. It's strictly that timeliness. We're not getting things into council in a timely fashion from a resident's perspective. And I think we need to rectify, and it looks like a pretty easy slam dunk for me that why not, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Thank you, Councillor Shaughnessy. Mayor Thompson.
Thank you. Looking at all three of these motions going forward, and I, with what Ms. Broshi said, and with what Mr. Rutter was saying, that we want to be open and transparent, and process is our friend, then I think we need to use process. And our policy procedure is required by each member, or each term of council, that we go through our procedural bylaw, like we did in 2012. Mr. Rutter used the expression as fix the tire, don't fix the tractor. Instead of getting rid of the tractor, just fix the tire. Well, then we need to go through that process. We have a procedural committee. I think that we've had three here. This is knee-jerk if we start to do this, because this is what we've been criticized for. So then let's use the process. Let's send this back so that we can have a public meeting, as we have previously, because the public said they weren't engaged before. I can assure you with all three of these, they will be. And let's go through the proper procedure so that we've been open and transparent on all three of these motions. I know, Councillor Shaughnessy, you probably won't agree with me. I know I hinted to you a little bit, but I think with all, when it's three of these that are changing the procedural bylaw, I definitely think let's go through the process, let's be open and let's be transparent, and let's send it back to the committee and have it come back, and let's go through this process to get it right. That's where I want to go with it. And so I would like to refer, and I don't know if I can or not, if I can, I'll have to do them individually, but that's what I would like to do, is referral allows discussion, and I would like to refer these back to the procedural committee.
So we have a motion to refer this to staff.
Yes, I so move.
Do we have a seconder?
That's only the one motion. The only one on the table is the one motion.
Correct. So.
But I would like to clarify something.
So just one moment, Councillor Shaughnessy. I The request has been made to take a, let's take a 10-minute break, if council is agreeable. 10-minute break, show of hands in favor of a 10-minute break. We'll adjourn. We will be back at 10-2. Reconvene. Before us, we have a motion from Mayor Thompson, an amendment. Is this an amendment? That the third paragraph be deleted and replaced with the following: that the procedural bylaw committee be reinstated, and that the mayor be an ex officio member of the committee, and that this matter be referred back to committee for consideration. So, Councillor Chanchier on the board, this is speaking to the amendment. Do you wish to speak? Go ahead.
Thank you. So that's the notice of motion he would like to refer back to committee. I won't refer something back unless I have a date, because refer back can means I could be here till doomsday for that coming back to us. So I need to be comfortable with a date at which we can meet.
Do you need a date, Councillor Shaughnessy, or do you, can you take it as direction that this will be moved as soon as possible?
I want it on there, please. I'd like the date on there. I'd like to know what it is, whether we're just going to meet and discuss the items that I brought forward, or whether we're going to actually reopen the whole procedural bylaw, because I understand the procedural bylaw is only ever reviewed once a term, but the clerk's memo talks about it's prudent that another complete review be pursued. She mentioned that she has some things that she'd like to change, or possibly change. But I think, I'm not letting this dangle there. I want some, the reason why we're getting this now, maybe I should make it clear, is that before this, I would have needed a two-thirds vote to reopen something. And so that is why this is waited until now to come forward to get us past that one-year mark. So, I think I'd like the clerk to provide us a date at which we can come back.
Well, it's Mayor Thompson's motion.
Mr. Mayor, but he can't do it without her.
Right, it's just, he's the mover, and I just... I thought we had one. Is there a seconder to Mayor Thompson's motion? Councillor Downey. So... Councillor Shaughnessy has asked that there be a reference to a date. So, Mr. Gorder.
Well, I'm just, can I speak, Mr. Chairman?
Please.
What I'm just saying is I think for us to be able to be open and transparent, there's a process here, and I think it's not, it's ill of me to say a date. I would say what would the clerk find that it's achievable to bring back, that we have something that works.
Mr. Gorder.
So through the chair to Mayor Thompson and to council, to be completely honest, at this moment, I can't commit to a date for a number of personal reasons, as well as just practical reasons with staffing. I don't feel like I'm in a position right now that I can commit to a date. I could commit to a date clearly when I give it some thought before the next council meeting. When this
and
is
we
ratified.
Have to ratify it at the next council meeting, correct? So we could have a date put in place by then.
Correct.
Councillor Shaughnessy, you still have the floor. Are you?
Sorry. Yeah, I apologize. No, I just, you know what? Sorry, I'm getting mixed signals around the room, but the people who actually delegated actually would like to see these three things go through. I'm being a stickler because these are minor. These are like not even like major. These are minor changes. And it's something that we always did. I'm just saying, let's like put it back. I mean, the public, that's what they want. They want the question period. They want to be able to have their motions come into council in a reasonable time. There is nothing in any one of these motions that would require us to review and look at the whole procedural bylaw from start to finish again. Like, is that what we're expecting here? I guess I just don't understand the expectation. Are we moving this one back, or are we actually telling the clerk now that we want to go and completely review the whole bylaw?
Well, what I would say, Councillor Shaughnessy, is as much as it's been expressed, and this is just my opinion, that certain items be considered in a procedural bylaw review, that's not to say that there aren't others. That's not to say that there's not residents or businesses in the community that would have other things changed. And by narrowing it down to those specific things only does not give it the fulsome ability to, and not to mention whether staff have anything that they would like to add for consideration. So I don't see any harm in having the review, looking at those things for certain, but why we would exclude reviewing other matters in the procedural bylaw seems to be, in my opinion, narrowly focused in this review. And as was stated, it is an incredibly significant document. So why would we want to take the chance of missing something else? Not that there is, but there could be. That's just my opinion.
I appreciate that, Mr. Chair. But in over a year, nobody else has brought a single motion forward wanting anything to be done. So I don't support going through the procedural review again. I think it's a waste of taxpayers' money, and I think it's a waste of time, and it's a report to council. We bring motions, and we put them in the agenda all the time. And so long as they have public scrutiny, then the public here supports it. So the public who actually wants this are here. I see a number of them sitting here that said that's what they want. Like, do we always take everybody's motions and send it back to for a report and for public opinion? And this is like a let's not get her done. So if I would have supported this, had we got together a procedural bylaw committee, which is Councillor Mezzapelli, Councillor, I almost said Groves, McClure, and myself. I'm the procedural bylaw committee. So I just don't see reviewing the whole thing. I know how much time I put into it last time. My review would be, let's go back to the structure we had before, because this we've done this in the past at the Town of Kellen. It didn't work under Mayor Seglins. They tried this structure, and they went, it's ridiculous. It's taking forever to get things into council because it's only every 4 or 5 weeks, whereas before we used to do every 2 weeks. So it's lengthening the time. This is not great for residents. It can't be great for the Town of Caledon. I know it's not, because we've had to change how things come to council because it's been taking too long. I mean, the golf tournament stuff is a prime example of that. So sorry, Mr. Mayor. You may want to refer that back. It's to allow motions so we don't have walk-on motions all the time. It's to get, like, that's so small. And it's what we did.
No, sorry. I don't mean to cut you off, Mr. Rutter, but I do want to, Mr. Rutter. This is a third paragraph to the recommendation in the report.
Motion 3, notice of motions.
Oh, sorry. In the notice of motion.
The notice of motion.
Okay, so sorry, I need to reel this in. Councillor Shaughnessy, you done? Councillor Groves.
I have a couple of questions. So if Councillor Shaughnessy didn't bring these motions, were we going to be doing a review of the procedural bylaw?
I would say no.
Okay. So Councillor Shaughnessy, through concerns that was raised by the community on these sorts of things, brought these motions forward. So I'm not sure why then we need to review the entire procedural bylaw if we had no intentions of doing so. Why would we not just review what's here? I really don't think that it's that difficult. And with respect to the date, just for clarification through you to the clerk, so if I understand what you said, you're going to be bringing, you'll bring something back at the next meeting, a date when you can bring this, you can have this back?
Mr. Gorder?
So through the chair to Councillor Groves, that is correct.
Okay, so it won't be left open-ended then if you don't insert a date today?
That is true. So I will have to give some thought dealing with my staffing. I've got, as I said, some personal issues that I need to address.
Right.
So I cannot commit to a time. I prefer to respectfully ask for some consideration so I can give it some thought prior to bringing a date.
Okay, and when's our next council meeting?
April 4th.
Okay. Thank you.
Mayor Thompson?
Thank you. The reason being is we've already had a discussion. Everybody does not know where they want to land. If we have question period, if it's going to be at the beginning or the end. And there's three asks here. And to me, to go and implement, and if you implement all three, it really disjoints. It's not the proper process to do this. If we want to take this seriously and deal with these issues seriously and implement them seriously, let's go back through the procedural bylaw. We'll implement this. I think it'll go rather quickly. If there's other things, we can come back. And I honestly believe this is the proper process. You want to be open and transparent? Then let's use the process to be open and transparent. Simple as that.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. Councillor DeBoer.
I think it's important, and I know that the mayor is probably looking at having this for all three, but the clerk did send a memo to us and about the three motions presented in addition to the in the additional agenda could significantly impact not only the transparency levels but also the administration of meetings, including technical resources. Staff have not had enough time to completely consider the impacts of the proposed changes, and it's important to note that additional public question period was addressed in the review of the current procedural bylaws. So we're kind of heading down where we were before, and I realize you want to have another look at it, but I would hope that if we're going to move with this, that it be included with all three. But when I look at notices of motion, if you want to bring a notice of motion to committee, the reality is having the motion at the committee is essentially notice of motion for the council meeting. So you have the motion come forward at committee. We can deal with it there. We don't have to deal with it again at council. I would say the clerk, is that essentially bringing a motion at committee is essentially the same format we had before with notice of motion. We had a two-meeting gap.
Thank you. Mr. So Porter. Through the chair to Councillor Mazzapelli, yes, that's true. Prior to this change in structure, council would have to, at a council meeting, say to council, I'm bringing a notice of motion at the next meeting about whatever subject. So then 2 weeks later, that motion would then be included on the council agenda for ratification. So that in accordance with the procedural bylaw, that is the practice. Council always has a tool to bring forward urgent business. Currently, right now, so the change to the procedural bylaw that that council adopted was now at committee, if as Councillor Shaughnessy, as Councillor DeBoer did this this week, they worked, they provided me with a motion to go on the agenda, a notice of motion to go on the agenda for today. So it was printed with the agenda and it's able to be debated today. And then following this meeting, it will be sent to council for a final vote.
Yeah, and it would follow one meeting to the other, which is the same format. Even if we had in the summertime where we only had a July and an August meeting, we would have a notice of motion come at the July meeting. Yes, it would be a month before we would deal with it at the August meeting. So we did have a bigger span there, but I don't think, like, the spans now are a couple of weeks, roughly, depending on schedule. So
that's
we're
correct.
Working on the same format there.
And so I see Ms. Brioche shaking. So just so we're clear, the last procedural bylaw, we only had a council structure. So before you could bring a notice of motion to be included on the agenda, it had to be mentioned in the agenda before. So Councillor DeBoer, let's say it was at a council meeting. That's how I understand it. It was that you were I want to let council know and giving you notice that at the next agenda, I'm going to be providing a motion about painting the streets pink. So at that point, I would say to Councillor DeBoer, thank you. I will work with you. For the next council agenda, that motion will be included. At the following council meeting, that motion would be listed on the agenda and have a final vote. There was no committee, so that final vote would be taken. The only way you could get a notice of motion included on the council agenda previously was through urgent business.
Yes, and it was the same format. It was exactly that. And in fact, in some cases, we actually would read the previous motion at the first meeting when we said we got a notice of motion. And it was one of the items, notice of motion. We would, in some cases we had it prepared, actually read the motion that we were planning on intending to bring to the next council meeting whenever the next council meeting happened. So that is essentially what we've got with the committee structure. And we still have the ability, if we need to bring something on urgent, and we did over the time refuse to bring something on urgent that we said it could be a notice of motion we'll deal with in 2 weeks' time so we can get some more information. So we did do that even with the council structure where we only had council meetings. We did exactly the same thing. And we had the option of bringing something on and make it urgent business and bring it on without notice, and it was the same format. It was a motion without notice, and we had to have a procedure change. Vary the procedure so that we could bring on something. But very rarely did we do that because we dealt with it as a notice of motion, and if it was urgent, it could be dealt with in one. So this motion actually, like, we haven't changed a whole lot other than we've still got the roughly 2 weeks in between meetings, and the notice of motion is essentially bringing it to the committee. If we do a notice of motion at the council meeting, essentially we're going to have a notice of motion. We won't be able to vote on it because the notice of motion is to say that we've got a motion at the council meeting that we're going to end up having to bring forward essentially to a committee that's going to end up bringing it to a council meeting, and it actually goes even farther down the road. So I don't know as to whether we're going to accomplish what the intent is here other than adding another piece of, bureaucracy, legislative bureaucracy, I guess would be the term for it. So, you know, from what the system we have, It should be able to carry on with it.
Councillor Groves.
So I have a couple of questions. I thought it was very simple, these motions, but anyway. So through you to the clerk. So if a notice of motion comes to committee and it fails, does it come to council?
So through the chair to committee. So the committee structure is, like all standing committees, is that this group meets more informally. You talk about the recommendations from staff. You can amend things. You can change it as you see fit, as the majority sees fit. Once that's done, that recommendation then goes to council for final approval. If committee, for instance, debates an item and it's lost, there is no recommendation. So it doesn't go to council for ratification. That being said, because there's no council ratification, there's no restrictions on reconsideration.
Okay, so here's the problem. That's the problem. So if it fails at committee, it doesn't go to council for ratification. Therefore, there's no accountability. The accountability piece is lost. I understand reconsideration, but I will tell you, given the voting pattern here, it's very difficult to get reconsideration. It is extremely difficult to get reconsideration, even at the region. It's extremely difficult to get reconsideration on certain items. It's not something that any council, and it's not just this council, any council supports. So that's the problem that I have, and I think that that's the challenge, is that it gets lost here. There's no tool, or you cannot ask for a recorded vote here. So that's the problem. It's a problem. And if we're talking about transparency, but before I go on, in your memo, it talks about impact, not only transparency level. So how do these motions impact transparency levels? I don't understand.
Okay. Okay, so thank you. Through the chair to Councillor Groves and the rest of committee. So when we talk about transparency, if you recall when Mr. Dean came and provided a presentation to council a number of times in regards to the procedural bylaw, he again highly recommended that public question period not be included on your council agenda. And the reason for that is what has happened as human beings, a question will be had, and council members will tend to start debating about an item or talking about an item, whether it even originated on the agenda. At times, it sometimes deviated to a different topic. And so that topic is now being discussed and debated. Is that, in my opinion, that is not transparent to the public, letting them know that actually this item council is actually considering at the time. So that's why, in my opinion, I've been doing this for a long time, I really recommend that any item for debate needs to be included on the agenda so that all members of the public have an opportunity to recognize what's on the agenda, and if they wish to delegate or if they wish to listen to the debate, they have the opportunity. So when I was talking about transparency, that's what I was relating to, is to try to mitigate something to be discussed around this table that wasn't included on the council agenda.
Right, and I understand, and with all due respect, Mr. Dean is not an elected official. Mr. Dean is a paid person, so he has his opinion, but I think when people elect politicians, they hold us accountable. Bureaucrats or not, Mr. Dean and all these other consultants and these people are not, but I think that the elected people are. And I think if we're talking about being transparent, I mean, it's just like when we're running in the elections, you have debates and that, and people get up and they ask you any question they want. I think that they still want that opportunity, that they can do that at any point, given point in time. So it reflects democracy, and I think I know that when the procedural the question period, public question period, was voted on and was lost, a lot of people in the community were upset. So I don't understand how it lacks transparency by having people come in and ask us anything they want.
Councillor Groves, sorry to interject, but the thing on the table is,
yes,
Mayor
okay,
Thompson's motion.
The amendment.
We've
I'm sorry.
Drifted far from.
Yep, you're right. I'm not going to challenge you on that. You're absolutely right. But anyway, back to the. I'm fine. The clerk said she's going to come back with a date, so the motion isn't lost then.
Sorry, which motion?
The motion number four, because that's what the mayor amended.
Yes, we're only on number four.
I'll let the clerk answer.
So through the chair to Councillor Groves, from what I understand right now on the floor is an amendment, and it hasn't been voted on. So nothing has been either approved or lost at this point.
And you'll be coming back on April 4th with a date when we can bring Councillor Shaughnessy's motion number four back.
My understanding is that what's suggested here is that this be referred back to, through the clerk, through the
committee.
Review committee.
I understand. So my question is, the clerk will be coming back on April the 4th when she feels she's able to bring something back,
Mr.
from the committee.
So through the chair to Councillor Groves, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Shaughnessy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, so one thing is we don't have any motion having to do, because we don't have a report before us and it would have to be published, to actually go and review the whole procedural bylaw. So right now, the only thing we're reviewing is my one motion. So there's nothing here that says that we're going to review the procedural bylaw in this. So if you're talking about this, then the three of us who are actually on the committee could meet this week, and we could come back with a recommendation to council. I don't have anything here about reopening the procedural bylaw. There is no motion that's been published, or is this a walk-on motion somebody's bringing to committee? I don't know.
Councilor
Shaughnessy. Right now we're only talking about a motion here.
Let's let the clerk. I think you have a valid point. Let's let the clerk.
So through the chair to Councilor Shaughnessy, the the procedural bylaw review committee is an advisory committee of council, so that would require giving notice to the public that an agenda has been made, allowing people the opportunity if they wish to listen to the debate taking place at the procedural bylaw committee. So unfortunately, as it's Tuesday right now, we wouldn't and you require a member of my staff and myself to be at that committee. So unfortunately, it's not as simple as the three of you getting together, because again, to be open and transparent, you want to let the public know if they're interested in listening to the debate. You need to give proper notice of that meeting.
Still didn't answer my question, though. The question was that there is no motion on the floor to review the procedural bylaw. We're only reviewing, at this point, you notice the motion that the Region Appeal does every time we go to the Region Appeal. Every meeting, we have notice of motions come on. We don't like have them come on, and then we can discuss them that day if we want. But right now, all we're discussing here is my notice of motion that was printed in the agenda, the addendum. There's no motion here to go back and reconsider the whole.
So through the chair to Councillor Shaughnessy, you're absolutely correct. On the floor right now is only this notice of motion in regards to notices of motion to be referred back to the committee, nothing else at this time.
Exactly, then why?
Mr. McClure, Councillor McClure, we're not going to speak at a turn.
No, so what I'm saying is we're making a mountain out of a molehill. We got a notice of motion. Let's just vote on the motion, have the mayor withdraw it. You guys want to turn it down, and then the clerk wants to bring a report back to council suggesting that we reopen the procedural bylaw and start all over again. I would entertain it at that point, but this is silly to be sending one silly little motion back to procedural committee, which is the three of us anyways. Doesn't make sense. Sorry, it doesn't make sense. I don't have any motion.
Ms. Brioche, please. No, this is not how this works. Ms. Brioche, no, I won't, because no, I understand what the issue is. Ms. Brioche. This is before council. I understand what you're getting at. The issue, Councillor Shaughnessy, is that, and I think the intent here was that the three motions that you have before us today, the recommendation in the memorandum from the clerk is that it would be better to review them, all of them, amongst any other considerations that might be brought forward in a comprehensive way, reinstituting the review committee. So your point is well taken in that what we have here is an amendment to a particular item for consideration for review of our procedural bylaw. To capture all of it, it would need to, I think, be broken out of that particular motion and be brought together as a review of those three items amongst others for consideration of that committee. So I understand what you're saying. I understand what Ms. Brioche is saying. If this motion were to pass, we would only be looking at one particular item. And then we would have to do this for the next item, yeah, and then the next. Can we not just put them all together and give them, because we are dealing with a particular motion. So I would ask the clerk, how can we, I think we all agree that we want to either pass or fail this as a package. How procedurally can we do that? I don't mean to put you on the spot, but this.
So through the chair.
To the chair.
Sorry. I think in my, as I'm thinking through, because the notices of motion were introduced individually, in my opinion, I think you need to address them individually.
That's what I thought.
The motions did not come forward together unless Mayor Thompson wishes to, in this motion, add public question period and recorded votes be included, and then the other two motions are withdrawn. That's just coming to my head. I would have to give it some thought of how we would actually do this, but the notices of motion were introduced individually, so in my opinion, they either need to be addressed individually or this amended to include the other concepts.
Okay. I just want to ask a question. Would it be inappropriate to add to this amendment the other two items, which I understand we're not dealing with right now, but as this is an amendment, that it would capture them in this one amendment so that Councillor Shaughnessy's intentions could be, whether she agrees or will vote for it or not is another question, but at least the three items would be captured together. Otherwise, we're going to have to do this for every motion that the next two motions she has before us. So if procedurally that's the way it has to be, then we've created a quagmire that...
So through the chair, I will share my thought process right now. So at a previous council meeting, council members were talking about contrary and germaneness of a motion. This is a perfect example of whether or not the other two motions are germane to this motion. And off the top of my head, I would recommend that if, because it's dealing with a procedural bylaw, that this could be amended, and it would be up to the chair if he feels or you feel that it's germane to the main motion to include the other items. I would strongly suggest, though, that you discuss that with the mover of the notices of motion, because I don't want to speak out of turn. It could be done. I would suggest that they keep separate.
Okay. Beg your pardon? I'm wondering if another short recess is in order to get this squared away, or else we're going to continue to chase our tail.
May I speak for a second?
You are on the board. I would ask that it be addressing the issue that we have before us right now. Councillor DeBoer?
Procedurally, I would suggest that, yes, this motion has to apply to all three. I think I asked the question if the mover intends to make this amendment to the other two. I think he was to the affirmative because he saw his head rattle up and down. My suggestion would be is rather than take another recess, let's just go through the three motions. It'll probably take about the same length of time to add this to the next two if we don't carry on and have an hour and a half long discussion on the next two. Because the intent is, I think, from around the table, is to send all of these three to have a discussion with staff once they have a chance to figure out what the timing is. So
your suggestion is to do them individually?
Do them individually, because they are individual motions. They're presented as such. It would be no different than if the three of them were a little bit different and we wanted to amendment, we'll do an amendment to each one. It just happens that they all are deal with the procedural bylaw, but... I don't think we need to try and figure out a way to make this one work with all three if, in general, it's going to work just the way it is, just do it twice more.
Okay. I'll just offer my quick thoughts. Is the risk you take there is there's no guarantee that all three will pass. So I know from the mover's perspective, it she would want all included. My personal recommendation is that whatever we have to do procedurally, and I want to look beyond just the three. I've made this comment before. I know staff may have some thoughts about if we're going to crack this open, and I would want to make sure that is permitted. I don't want this to be a very narrowly focused. If we're talking about openness and transparency and making this a better document, I don't want to lose that in a narrow focus. So my personal preference would be to include all three, as well as what staff need as far as making sure there's an opportunity to look at it in its fulsomeness. That would be my, because then we know it's either going to fail or it's going to pass as a whole, and all of it will be captured. I don't personally, as a councillor, as a chair, think it's contrary. I think the intent is similar for all three of those motions. Okay, well then if the mover doesn't think it's germane, then I'm I'm wasting my time. So. Okay, so a suggestion I've been given by the clerk is, as Mayor Thompson is the mover, may wish to move the whole, as I guess is outlined in the memorandum, the whole procedural bylaw for review, which will capture Councillor Shaughnessy's three motions, as well, this basically gets back to where I was coming from, as well as anything else. It's a review. This doesn't capture that the way it's written. So it's your motion, seconded by Councillor Downey.
Can I speak to that?
Mayor Thompson?
The mover didn't want to have all three go together, so that's why we did it as an amendment versus as a referral. If I could have referred all three back to the procedure committee, along with anything else that we need to look at, let's do it. It doesn't hurt to take a second look at anything. It's healthy to do that. So I have no problem doing that. And if we can expedite it to involve all the other two motions, as well as anything else that might occur, let's do it. Let's move on. Let's get going. I'm prepared to do that.
I have another suggestion. It might not be a bad idea for you to retract your motion. Allow Councillor Shaughnessy's three motions to come as she has proposed them individually. They will pass or they will fail. At that point, could Mayor Thompson not bring forward that fulsome motion?
No.
Okay. Then I'm at a loss.
You'd have to do it right now.
Councillor Shaughnessy.
My suggestion is that I will support referring each one of them back to the procedural committee, but I'm not supporting a whole review at this point. I don't want this to be dragged out, put off, and kicked down the road. So if this council would agree with me that we just do this with the procedural committee, I'm sure we've got enough people in the clerk's department that could support us on this. I mean, guys, we get a whole agenda on Thursday or Friday, and we have to go through that whole thing. I provided this Thursday morning at 8 o'clock. I don't know why staff couldn't have reviewed it between Thursday morning and now. That's more than time I get to do the whole agenda. So that aside, which I find unusual, I will support moving it to the people in the procedural bylaw committee if it's just these three items so they don't get kicked down the road. So if Mayor Thompson, if that suits you, I will support that the three of us meet in a timely fashion within the next couple of weeks to sit down, go through it, and if the clerk's department would like to come back and review the whole procedural bylaw, then they can bring a report to council and we can decide on that. But if that's fine with you, Mr. Mayor, then I will support the three of them being referred to the existing procedural bylaw committee to meet in a timely fashion. To me, timely is 2 weeks, if that would be okay.
Okay, as chair, and I apologize that this is not going well, and I am not.
I was compromising.
I am at a loss as far as what is available. I have been advised by the CAO that if I were to take a short recess, he might be able to provide something. And so I would ask. And
the mover is fine with that. I'm just saying it within the next couple of weeks. I'm just like, I don't want to get kicked down the can. I've been waiting 3 months to bring it in to.
So what I have, and I'm proposing as chair, is to.
And then we can all go home or go have a drink. I don't know, but just like, let's
so,
move
Councillor along. Councillor Shaughnessy, what I have, I'm bringing to council as a chair, is a request for a 5-minute recess. I would like to hear what Mr. Galloway has. It's before council whether you wish to do this or not. If it fails, then. So I'm asking for a 5-minute recess to allow the CAO to provide something for our consideration. And I'll ask for a vote for a 5-minute recess to do that. All in favor? Okay, thank you. We will resume at 2:15. call the committee back into session. On the floor, it's moved by Mayor Thompson and seconded by Councillor McClure. This is an amendment to the amendment. So if any councillors need confirmation of what's happening here, because it's getting a little convoluted, please don't hesitate. It reads, let paragraph 4 be deleted and replaced with the following. That matters requiring further public process, including the procedural bylaw, including notices, motion, public question period, and recorded votes, be reviewed by the committee in a timely fashion. So I'm going to open up the board for discussion on the amendment to the amendment, which is what you see before you there. Councillor Shaughnessy.
Very quickly. So I heard come back in May, so I'm assuming it's got to come back to committee in May, and which is May 16th. Is that correct? I'm just looking to find out if that's...
So Councillor Shaughnessy is asking about the date that this will come back?
Committee is May 16th, Kerry. Is that when it would be coming back?
Mr. Gorder.
We'd have to come back to committee, not council.
So through the chair, to Councillor Shaughnessy, as I described to Councillor Groves, I can't commit right at this time. I really, as due to personal reasons and other matters, I need to take a look at it before I can commit to anything.
I think it's fair, Councillor Shaughnessy, that there's stuff already in queue, that just regular business, that staff clearly understand that this is going to be addressed as soon as practical. And I don't know that we can ask any more than that.
Okay, I'm just going to say for the record, I would normally never support something like this that didn't have a date attached to it. Just because everybody's getting frustrated and tired, I'm going to actually support this going forward, but we really need to have dates, guys, because this timely fashion is a word I would use, but it certainly doesn't speak to anything. There's nothing that anybody can be held to, because everybody has a different intention of what timely fashion means.
Okay.
So through the chair to Councillor Shaughnessy, as I mentioned a number of times, I'm more than happy by the next council meeting to provide you with a date, so then you can amend this motion and include the date in the final motion.
But nothing to do with the opening the procedural bylaw. Okay, let it go for now.
Okay. I do not see anybody else on the list. Then we are going to vote on the amendment to the amendment. All those in favor, please indicate. It is carried. Okay, so now it is the amendment as amended. Is there any questions on the matter? Seeing none, we're going to call the vote. All in favor? Carries. And now, finally, the motion as amended. Is there any question or comment? Seeing none. All in favor? It is carried. Thank you. So I have a question procedurally then. Does this nullify the following motions? Does the mover need to formally rescind them? Or is it just understood?
So through the chair, just automatic response. I would recommend that the mover of both of the, or the author of both of those notices of motion indicate whether she would want them withdrawn or individually voted on.
Let's refer them all back just for clarity.
Okay. The next motion by Councillor Shaughnessy was with respect to public question period, whereas adding public question period permits the public to address council prior to decisions being made. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the procedural bylaw be amended to include public question period to the following agendas, Committee of the Whole General Meeting, Committee of the Whole Planning and Development, and Council meetings starting in May 2017, and that the duration for the public question period be 15 minutes, and that public question period only address items that are listed on the agenda, and that public question period be placed on the agenda following delegations. So we need a seconder to get this on the floor. Councillor Groves. It was held by Councillor Shaughnessy. Go ahead.
So I guess at this point we can make it a friendly amendment. So how would you like to word this to go back to procedural bylaw?
I have, I'll let the clerk answer.
So thank you. Through the chair to Councillor Shaughnessy, it does need to be an official referral. So if you wish to move an amendment to refer it back to the procedure bylaw committee, you'll need a mover and a seconder.
Yeah, so I'll go to refer it back with the notice of motion already being referred back. And Councillor Groves, do you want to second it?
So then we have a motion to refer back to staff. Back to the procedure bylaw committee. Is there any questions? All in favor? Carried. So now the main motion, as amended by Councillor Shaughnessy. Any question? Seeing none, all in favor? The motion as amended carries. The last motion is recorded votes by Councillor Shaughnessy, whereas the cities of Toronto, Mississauga, London, and Guelph use technology to record votes of all decisions being made at their council meetings, and whereas using recorded votes is an opportunity for the Town of Caledon to take further steps to better engage and inform residents about the decisions and actions being made by council, and whereas recorded votes provide the public the ability to track votes and voting patterns, and whereas recorded votes strengthens openness, transparency, accountability for decisions being made by elected officials. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the procedural bylaw be amended to require all decisions, including amendments, be recorded at the Committee of the Whole and Council meeting starting in May 2017, and that motions are which are procedural in nature not be required to be recorded, that recorded votes be captured verbally by stating yes or no in order for the decisions to be captured on the audio recordings of the meetings, that as part of the 2018 budget process, staff be directed to investigate the feasibility of implementing technology for the recording of all votes. Councillor Shaughnessy, you had held this.
Thank you. I'll just quickly speak to this one. Most of this motion comes from Mississauga because they did this. What they didn't have in their motion, and I think it's imperative moving forward, is the part that I put in here where we verbally say yes or no, because I've listened to the audio and everything just goes dead when it comes to voting, and nobody, if they count on the audio to get their updates on council, they have no idea who voted for what. So even though Mississauga didn't do that, I added that in because I believe there are people at home listening to us or wanting to go back and review it in the future, and I think it provides clarity for them. The clerk actually added the last line in about looking at it into the budget process, which I said that was fine with me, but I still want it to be audio. And that's even from an accessibility point of view. We sort of tick that box. That were inclusive. So this also, I wanted to just provide council. I know everybody's getting tired on why some of the elements were in this particular motion, which I think are very key to open and being transparent. So I will make a friendly amendment to this and refer this back to the procedural bylaw committee as per the last two.
And seconded by Councillor Groves. Any discussion on the matter? So looking for a vote on the referral back to the committee. All in favor? It carries. Thank you. So now the main motion as amended. Any question? Seeing none, all in favor? It carries. Motion as amended carries. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is correspondence. Is there anything in the correspondence package that requires action? Seeing none. With that, committee is adjourned. Thank you.